This is Billy Shears. Join us this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, following nighttime Cup of Joe. We'll take a look at the king, Elvis Presley.
The first car I ever bought was the most beautiful car I've ever seen. It was secondhand, but I parked it outside of my hotel the day I got it. I sat up all night just looking at it.
Be there this Thursday on Foxed Up at his new time, 12 midnight, right here on the Head On Radio Network, and find out what happened to that car.
I say, oh, meet me in a hurry behind the bars. Don't you be afraid that I'll do you no harm. I want you to bring along my rocking shoes, cause tonight I'm going to rock away.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
This is the Quality News Network. Ahead of schedule, the U.S. military is beginning to pare down its troops in Iraq. The current total of 20 combat troops will shrink to 19 because the 3rd Brigade 1st Cavalry Division is preparing to leave. The total number of troops is expected to shrink from 167,000 to 140,000 in July. In Baghdad, Iraq's prime minister says sectarian violence has dropped by 77% from this time last year. The general commanding U.S. forces says support from regular Iraqis will keep terrorism low in the capital city. Former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto will not hold a planned protest today. She's been placed under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. The protest by Bhutto was aimed to pressure President Pervez Musharraf to end the state of emergency and step down as Army Chief. A Fatah rally for Yasser Arafat turned deadly when gunfire killed at least 6 people and wounded 80 today in Gaza. More than 200,000 supporters of the defeated faction in the Hamas-ruled Gaza Strip attended the rally. Nigerian authorities arrested a group of suspected al-Qaeda terrorists in northern Nigeria today. Police say the suspects carried bomb-making materials. In September, U.S. officials warned Nigeria that it was at risk of a terrorist attack. In San Francisco, the Coast Guard has opened a criminal investigation into last week's bridge collision of a container ship. The subsequent oil spill is the region's worst in 20 years. The crew of the South Korea-bound vessel is being held for questioning. International authorities are calling it an environmental catastrophe. As many as 10 huge ships sank last night in the storm-tossed Black Sea, spilling more than 1 million gallons of oil and sulfur. China's foreign minister travels to Iran tomorrow to meet with officials about their refusal to suspend uranium enrichment. And Pope Benedict plans a spring visit to the U.S. It will be the pontiff's first visit. Pope Benedict will travel to Washington, D.C. and New York. President Bush spent his Veterans Day at his ranch in Texas. He went to an American Legion post, which was honoring 4 Texans who were among the nearly 4,000 U.S. military who died in Iraq since 2003. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
Former Vice President Al Gore can add venture capitalists to his list of accomplishments. Gore announced today he will join Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers. The company is one of Silicon Valley's most well-known venture capital firms. He will head up their Climate Change Solutions Group. health officials are issuing a warning about herbal alternatives to Viagra and other sex medications. Men who take nitrates to lower blood pressure and regulate heart disease should not be mixing the nitrates with herbal drugs. Experts say there's a risk of slowing the blood flow, which can lead to a heart attack or stroke. The Air Transport Association estimates that 27 million passengers will fly over the 12 days beginning November 16th for the Thanksgiving holiday. Airline officials say flights will be about 90% full. The U.S. trade deficit fell to $56.5 billion in September. It's the lowest level in more than 2 years. The plunging value of the U.S. dollar has increased American exports. And the price of oil is falling today. That after Saudi Arabia's oil minister announced OPEC would consider increasing output when the cartel meets later this year. Light sweet crude oil trading down $1.71 at $94.62 a barrel. Gold is down $27 at $808 an ounce. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended down 55 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here it is, almost 7 minutes past the hour. It's Monday. It is the 12th day of November. It is the officially observed part of Veterans Day. The actual day itself, of course, was yesterday, so we get a federal holiday today to mark the service of all veterans. But of course, we all know that the history of this day relates specifically to the First World War, the war to end all wars. The war that would make the world safe for democracy, I think, is what Woodrow Wilson said. And it was a wake-up call to the world that, in fact, we had discovered new and horrible ways to raise the levels of butchery of which we were capable beyond anything we had ever imagined before. Armies using Napoleonic tactics and modern weapons lined up across from each other and astonished each other with the degree to which they could engage in wholesale slaughter. It changed the attitude of a generation. Millions across Europe, thousands and thousands in the United States were forever transformed. It saw the use of poison gas and automated warfare that featured submarines and tanks and aircraft, and taught us absolutely nothing. Because the vindictiveness of France and Great Britain, coupled with the isolationist policies of the United States in refusing to engage in the League of Nations, guaranteed some 20 short years later the rise of a demon in Germany by the name of Adolf Hitler. And so, with that in mind, I want to at least commemorate this day, a day in which we honor all veterans in this country, and their service to this country, their sacrifices for this country, with just a couple of brief readings. And I'll go ahead and I'm not going to wait for the end of the show to do that. Let's do this on the front end so that we know or have the right mindset and know that we have done honor and done remembrance. There is no more profound work, and I've done this, I think I've read this poem every year since, what, 2003-4? Wilfred Owen, Dulce et Decorum Est. It's the first words of a Latin saying from the poet Horace. He says, Horace wrote, Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori, which translates as, it is sweet and right to die for the fatherland. And Wilfred Owen, knowing that, being a fairly educated man from Great Britain, put that in perspective with the First World War. And he said, bent double, like old beggars under sacks, knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge till on the haunting flares we turned our backs and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on, bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue, deaf even to the boots of tired, outstripped 5-9s that dropped behind. Gas! Gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man on fire, in fire or lime, dim through the misty panes and thick green light as under a green sea. I saw him drowning in all my dreams before my helpless sight. He plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If in some smothering dreams you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face like a devil sick of sin, if you could hear at every jolt the blood come gurgling from the froth-corrupted lungs, obscene as cancer, bitter as the cud of vile incurable sores on innocent tongues, my friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, Dulce et decorum est pro patria mori. And one other. Just one other, that's all. A.E. Housman. Here dead we lie, because we did not choose to live and shame the land from which we sprung. Life, to be sure, is nothing much to lose, but young men think it is, and we were young. And somewhere, virtually every family, if you look back far enough, and if you bother to remember them, and do please bother to remember them, not because they gave their life for your country or their country or someone else's country, but because they were willing to do something in anticipation of you. Of you. I remember being a little boy and looking at my Uncle Fred's picture and asking my father, would he have liked me? And him saying, oh, he would have just thought the world of you. we would have had some good times. And Fred is a brick in a veterans memorial that sits hard by the side of U.S. 60 in Anstead, West Virginia now. And in the short period of time, Fred's clean red brick will be covered with the filth of coal dust and soot and garbage as we profane that memorial to the living and the dead of all wars and all veterans from this particular area of the county. We will profane them. We will dishonor them. We will spit upon them. Not too long hence from this Veterans Day 2007, we will tell the world what we think of them as the coal trucks rumble past and spew their hateful, vile pestilence upon that little memorial. Remember them, because when they were doing what they did, they weren't remembering you. No, far more, they were imagining you. Imagining you. And that is even, to my mind, more profound. I don't guess that I'm going to do a lot of raising hell this evening, because when you look at things in that perspective, it sort of saps you. Got out some old photographs today, looked at both of my grandfathers in their doughboy uniforms, standing starch arrows straight with the puttees and the greaves and the bloused out pants. All of them, they all seem to be the same pose in the same photograph, only with different faces. And they were printed as postcards that could be mailed back home. And it is worth remembering those men, those women, those people. Very well worth remembering. Let's go to the phones. Hey, who've I got?
Bob, this is Ed.
Hey, Ed, how you doing?
Hi, I'm doing keeping up the plow.
Well, that's most as can be expected, I reckon.
Yep. I wanted to talk to you about a couple things.
Okay.
I wanted to try to get this straight of what's going on the nurses' strike over there. I know some things that's happening, like some of them are going to the nursing homes and filling in while they're on strike. And then they had one that crossed the picket line. But I just wondered what the real condition, if you knew what it was, for the nurses there.
Well, it's tough. But it's manageable, so I'm told, since some fairly large organizations have gotten involved, because that union didn't have a whole lot of infrastructure. It certainly didn't have a strike fund. But folks like SEIU, Service Employees International Union, the biggest union in the United States, has gotten involved. The AFL-CIO pledged money and food and did a big donation, if I understand correctly, this past Saturday. These nurses can win this strike if they will stay true to their goals. If they let the hospital bust them, I wouldn't let a rabid dog be treated there if they let the hospital bust them, because it's going to mean that the quality of care will be next to nil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got into it with the mayor on Steve O'Brien's show because of his lies. You know, he said, why didn't the nurses come back to him in May? And he had just said that they couldn't do anything anyway, and then turned around and said if they had come back to him in May, they might have been able to help him. But, of course, he's a lying piece of crap anyway.
Well, he's made his bed, and I don't know when it'll happen. But I got a feeling that when he comes up for re-election, this is not going to be forgotten.
No, I know it won't, and I'm going to, if good Lord lets me live that long, I'm gonna make sure that he's treated like Shirley Love and the other scumballs that's in these offices. So I told him on that program when he went to bridge day, don't walk too close. but I really didn't mean it. I'd like to see it, but he's as much a part of anti-union movement as the Chamber of Commerce is.
Well, sure he is, and he made that clear. He has come out strongly for the corporation, the hospital corporation, in this dispute.
Yeah, well, he's got his own problems going right now too. I can tell you this: he either used state or private contractors to do his driveway, and let the city pay for it, and. Believe me, there's some guys after his hind end that despise him as bad as I do. And so he's, you know, sin, like I said before, is like trying to hold down a great old big inner tube off of one of the state road trucks, pumping it up and putting it in the river and trying to hold it all underwater at one time.
Yep.
It'll come up.
Some of it's going to get up.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, I wanted to touch on torture, and I don't, you know, I really don't know how the general public feels about torture, but not knowing whether waterboarding is torture or not, it's like I say, there ain't no help for stupidity. Any damn thing that hurts you and causes you to say stuff that is out of the realm of reason is torture. And in my opinion, for years, they've had, or at least they told us, and I mean, Bob, I'm talking about years ago, that they had methods of getting the truth out of you, like the chemicals and stuff like that, and then them come up with, we've got some real sick people. What's the proper name for them? Sadists or whatever?
Yeah, psychopaths, sure.
They enjoy this stuff. There's people that enjoys pulling the damn electric switch that kills people. And I think that's the kind of people that they pick out to perform these type of tactics. So I've got mixed. I want to see the truth out. I want to see people saved, but call it what it is. And it's like my daughter told him in the seventh grade about the Ayatollah Khomeini or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
For the Shah of Iran. They talked about the torture chamber he's had. My daughter told, you know, and of course the school teacher was about as stupid as a Ned in the first reader, and they got into a little hassle, and my daughter told her, said, well, said, what it boils down to, said, they ought to be good at it, said, we taught them.
And there's a heck of a lot of truth in that.
Yeah, you know, we have passed on the techniques, if you want to call them techniques, to these other countries, and the ones that call ourselves friends, and then we get into a conversation about friends. What in the heck is going to happen in Pakistan, Bob? What's your insight on that?
I don't know that I have any, Ed. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck.
No, I know that.
This is a bed that we've made.
I feel like we bought and paid for it too. I just wanted to hear somebody that knew something say something along those lines.
All along, you know, this particular administration has a real attention deficit disorder problem. They keep looking at stuff that doesn't pose any risk to us, like, you know, Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remember George Bush saying, well, he's got nuclear program-related activities. Now, if you just parse that or diagram it like maybe your elementary school teacher taught you to once upon a time, nuclear program related activities. that's about 900 miles from having a nuclear program. And we went to war over that, or he tried to kill my daddy, or we're bringing democracy, or
oil,
or and well, we went to war with full knowing full well that there was a dictator, that's George's phrase, Ed, a brutal dictator, and that's what Pervez Musharraf is. He shouldn't be allowed in polite society. He's a brute. He's a dictator. He's a thug. He's a tyrant. And him sitting there on a highly repressed society, part of which is comprised of religious fundamentalists who believe the earth is flat. You know, the real dangerous kind.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, oh, they're our good friend. And we have poured billions, Ed, billions and billions of dollars into propping his dictatorial, tyrannical rear end up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in his end game now. He knows he either becomes dictator for life over a cowed, miserable population, or he ends up carrying his head in a box.
Yeah. And, or, you know, getting himself to exile before.
Oh, yeah, moving to Switzerland where his gold is.
Yeah.
Because that's the way it is with all these little dictators. They bleed their countries dry, and they tuck it away in a numbered account in Switzerland or Liechtenstein or the Cayman Islands or Dubai, for all we know. And then you go and you live happily off the interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it astonishes me that we have been so politically naive, so absolutely dunderheaded about Pakistan, because, you know, the thing is, if you don't support the right people, the guys that are going to lop off Musharraf's head are the crazy people, okay? And then they're going to have their fingers on a nuclear button, and all of a sudden worrying about Iran or Iraq doesn't, you know, not so much.
Immaterial. I just got one more, and I'm going to get off of here.
Not to worry.
I saw on television where George Bush, the old man, didn't want us to pick on his little boy. Now, you know, that's something. We got a president that is so gutless that you have to have an old man like that on there telling people not to pick on him. You know, they're such a despicable bunch that...
Ed, George Bush the First has known all along that there was something wrong. There was something bad wrong with his boy. I don't know if he saw him one day when Barbara dropped him on his head as a baby, or what. But he's known there was something bad wrong with his boy. And you know, it's kind of, I guess that's maybe the source of his feelings. He knows that we're talking about a person who has no business being in the office in the first place.
Yeah. Well, I think it's genetic. You look at his mother. You know,
she's a hateful old beast.
Yeah, it's kind of a long string of idiocy.
Yeah, well, that family is no, it's certainly nothing to hold up to the world as a model of genius. You got George, you got the sister, I forget what her name is, Dot or something. You've got Neil. And with the three of those, you don't have enough IQ to warm a room. The only one with a half a brain is Jeb, and I mean half a brain at best.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I don't have any respect for him, but I give him credit for being a notch above the idiot we got in.
Yeah. Well, you know, kind of the way you give a lobster credit for being a notch above a crawdad.
Yeah, right. Just a little bit bigger idiot.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Bob, I'll get off here and let somebody else have those.
Well, Ed, I'll tell you what, I'll just put you back on hold and you can listen if you want to.
I sure will.
All thank right. You. Thank you, Ed. It's always good talking to you.
Same here.
Take care now. Our good friend Ed here in Fayette County with me. And I tell you what, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll have B.J. Godwinson with me. She is the founder and originator of Patchwork Films. the producer of a documentary by the name of Mountain Morning, and that's Morning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. And I think you'll enjoy what she's got to say. We got to, Nanette and she and BJ and I were all together for the Blessing of the Mountains this past Saturday in here near Anstead, West Virginia. And it was it's like going to a funeral. But we'll be talking with BJ here in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to listener-supported independent media. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here are some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, and as promised, we're joined on the phone right now by Patchwork Films producer, director, videographer B.J. Godmanson, West Virginia native, West Virginia resident. B.J., thanks for joining us. So glad to have you on the show.
Hi, Bob. I am just, I'm tickled to death. I haven't been on the radio for a while. This will be fun.
Well, welcome aboard. It was so nice to see you this past Saturday and talk with you and Nanette from Coal River Mountain Watch and see your perspective. It was good to know, you know, I saw you up there with your camera and your boom mic and everything, and or your shotgun mic, and it's good to see these things recorded. And you've made, you've made a career of it, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I have. I haven't been doing mountaintop removal all my life, but it's all I do now. And, you know, when I got involved with the Christians for the Mountains folks doing their first film, once I got out there, I just realized that all these people have stories to tell, and it has a huge impact on people when they can hear them. And so that's what I do.
Well, rather than me sitting here and telling people what I saw this past Saturday, let's start with you. What were your impressions going up on top of the mountain there near Anstead and seeing what is coming at us?
I tell you what, I was bewildered by all of it. First off, the event they had up there, the blessing of the mountains, it was very moving for me. I lost it and cried a couple of times. But then when it was over, there was a gentleman up there who was a disabled Vietnam veteran who had a Jeep, who knew the lay of the land up there. He was one of the local people, and offered to take me up on top of the mountain so I could film. And I had noticed, you probably noticed this too, coming up the mountain when we were driving up the Fire Tower Road, all the trees that were all just laying along the hillside going up.
Yep.
But when we got up to the top and looked across, we were standing on one mountain and looking across at another, and you were looking down on the valley, which is going to be the Valleyville, and you could see the little town of Jody. And when you looked out at this mass hillside, there were all these bulldozers parked on top, and they had literally just mowed down all the trees on the mountain. Everything that was on top that they had moved so far just pushed over. I saw no sign that they'd made any attempt to actually timber any of that and take those logs out of there. I think we would have seen, you know, evidence of that if it had been done.
And until you get your video done, BJ, let's paint the picture as verbally as we can. We're not talking about little saplings and scrub trees.
No. We're not. We're talking full-blown trees, and I would guess that there was a good bit of hardwood.
Oh, yeah, oaks.
No doubt.
Maple?
Probably. You know more about that area than I do because you live there. But I'm guessing that it was timbered way back when, maybe 60, 70 years ago. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but my guess is that it was pretty healthy growth on that mountainside.
It was very healthy, and you could see it piled up in that one wide place before we got on up to where we held the ceremony was held. We're talking about hardwood trees bigger around than a man can reach.
There were some big logs laying there. There were huge logs laying there, and I, you know, when we talk all the time about West Virginia being a great state for, you know, the lumber industry and the forestry association trumping this up all the time. I just can't. It blows my mind, even outside of the mountaintop removal realm, that people would want the coal out of there so bad that they would overlook the timber and just push it down in the valley. It just makes me sick.
But it also points up, BJ, to the nature of the industry, doesn't it? I mean, that's real value. I mean, that's value added. That's value added stuff.
That's serious value, and that's serious jobs.
Yeah,
that's serious jobs. And I think this does. This tells us a lot about the nature of this industry. They're just grab, rape, and go.
And reclamation ain't going to happen.
No.
One of the things that was pointed out, and I'm sure you heard it as well as I did. The minister, Reverend Father Roy Jean Crist,
mm-hmm.
Who led this event, pointed out a couple of pointed little knobs behind him, and a coal company started. This is amazing. I talked a little bit about it with our engineer John Fox down in Australia last night. They started mining this without even so much as a permit. They just went in and did it.
I was totally shocked to hear that, weren't you? Did you know this?
No, I didn't. But I know it happens. And the thing is, they won't be sued.
No.
They won't be fined.
No.
They won't be charged with the crime that they have committed.
Right.
They'll get away with it.
And the DEP will turn right around and give them the go-ahead to just go right back in there and business as usual. Start up right where they left off.
It is. You use the perfect word for it, BJ. It's bewildering.
It is. Blows my mind. It blows my mind. And I went to the website. Have you looked at the website of the company that owns Powellton Coal?
No, I have not. Is that Amvest?
Amvest. If you go to their website, and they've got a link at the top for each one of their different coal companies, click on Powellton, and the whole page is about that particular mountaintop removal site where we were on Saturday. They've got this high-resolution photograph of these huge machines just literally ripping the guts out of the hillside, you know, with coal exposed everywhere, and, you know, bragging up their high profits and return, and then a big thing about reclamation at the end, and it's all just a blatant, the whole reclamation thing is just a blatant lie.
Well, sure it is, because that costs money.
Yes.
And this is, we're talking about coal companies that can't even make a profit, for heaven's sakes.
That's right.
I mean, if you look at their quarterlies, their earnings statements, things like that, they're always operating in the red, and yet they've got multi-million-dollar CEOs.
Right.
And they're selling coal faster than they can dig it.
Right.
But it's not profitable. Why do you engage in a practice that is not profitable? I mean, you know, the right wingers, the Republicans, whatever, they all talk about free market economics, and, you know, it's going to be driven by profit, and if it's driven by profit, then they'll maximize business practices, and, you know, it's profitable to do all the blah, 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 blah. They can't make a profit doing this, and they're still doing it. Something's wrong. Something stinks.
Something stinks, and God, there's a part of me sometimes. Someone responded to my blog today and asked me if we could call them something other than King Coal, because we overthrew the king in, I don't know, 1777 or something.
Well,
I just let this person know. You know, King Coal is a reality in Appalachia. It's what we live with. They rule the government. They rule the electorate. And they rule the economy. And what else can you call them but King Coal? And you have to wonder if part of it...
God Almighty Coal. I mean, you know, that's available.
Yeah, right. Well, right. Tyrants, that's available.
Yeah.
We could think of lots of words. But and then when I looked at Amvest and saw that they were, their headquarters and their bases in Charlottesville, Virginia, and, you know, when you're a West Virginian and you hear Charlottesville, you just kind of cringe anyway.
Yeah, because once again, we're getting stiffed.
That's right.
All the good is going out, and all the filth and the refuse and the poison and the heavy metals and the acid mine drainage, that stays.
They leave it all here, and they take everything else with them. All the money leaves. All the money leaves, and I get so, and you do too, I get so tired of hearing this thing about jobs and all of the residual jobs that come off of coal, and I'm sorry, I just don't buy it.
Well, the only way you could buy it is if you walked into it with the mindset of that you have walking down the Carnival Midway, BJ. If you stop and you plunk down your dollar bill at the little booth and you think you're actually going to win...
Yeah, right.
You know, the barrel on the BB gun is crooked, the darts are weighted, and the little duckies don't burst.
Right, and the champagne glasses are not to let your dime stay in there.
Darn straight.
It's the truth. It's absolutely the truth.
So, you know, you've got a nice little rig there you're shooting with and everything. I was wondering, as you went down Fire Tower Mountain Road, did you notice there were a couple of really clear spaces where you could see the outcropping of the coal? You could actually see the seam that they're after.
Oh, gosh, I didn't notice that.
Oh,
yes, I did. It was right along the road.
Yeah. I stopped and shot a little bit of it myself with the little handy cam.
Yeah.
And sadly, I forgot to. I should have sent the boy outside the vehicle, but we had cars behind us.
Yeah.
Hold up a pencil for scale or something.
And I
need people to understand that we're not talking about, you know, the seams of coal like get dug out from under a mountain, you know, that are 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12 feet thick.
Oh, right, right.
This was a seam of coal that was 6 inches thick.
Right, right. That's what I guessed. And, of course, on their website, they're showing you this big seam of coal that's like, you know, 36, 48 inches, maybe even more. And they didn't shoot that up on that mountain. That's a confab picture that came from someplace else in the country, no doubt. Yeah. No, that's the thing that people don't understand, that they're blasting off the mountain. They're going after these little teeny tiny seams of coal, which, by the way, those little seams of coal are full of rock and debris.
Sure they are.
Settling of the mountain over time. So you take a 6-inch seam of coal, they're going to get maybe 3 inches out of it. What's that?
I don't know. I honestly don't. It bewildered. We're back to that word again, BJ. Bewildered. Yeah. Where is the worth in this? Where is the profit in this? Where are the... Somebody's lying to somebody somewhere along the way. I got enough common sense to recognize that, because, you know, the heavy equipment operators that call themselves miners that work on these demolition jobs, BJ, these people are making $50,000 and $60,000 a year.
That's right. And they're gonna, you know, every time something happens, like for instance the incident down at Jupiter where they've closed them down for a while down there. So the heavy equipment operators, parading as miners, okay, are screaming now that you're taking away our jobs and we don't have any work. Hey, I'm sorry.
So,
a equipment operator can get a job anywhere. They'll work on a dam project somewhere. There's always work for a heavy equipment operator.
There's plenty of honest work in America.
Sure, and we could have that honest work here. That's what pains me so much, is that we could have good, honest, sustainable jobs for the people in our state if our state government would get off of their duff and do the job they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
I really believe that.
Yeah.
I think they use coal as a scapegoat, as an excuse to not have to buckle down and do the job.
Well, coal is our heroin.
Yeah. Right.
You know, as long as you've got somebody out there that'll sell you the little bag, you can always rationalize a reason for why you need to keep using.
Sure, you bet you can. And I firmly believe that if people all across this country, if we got the message out to everybody in this country that if they did more to conserve the energy that they use. If we all did it at the same time, the demand for coal would drop so much, we would have no choice but to go to other forms of energy. And I don't mind saying this. I'd really like to see the coal industry out of business.
Well, sooner or later it will be. It has to be. It's a finite resource.
It has to be.
And we have to prepare for that day, and we are extremely short-sighted if we don't.
Listen to this one. Did you happen to read the... And I know it was on one of the internet, state internet news, maybe Channel 8 or something, TV. The thing about the Western Greenbrier cogeneration plant over at Raynell.
No.
They're getting over $100 million from the Department of Energy to build this big cogen plant over there.
Yeah, to burn up
the gob pile.
Yeah.
So what the story said was that the plant is going to produce electricity for neighboring businesses in the community so that those businesses do not have to get their power from fossil fuels. Now think about that statement.
Well, the gob pile is a fossil fuel.
Well,
of course
it's a fossil fuel. But they put this garbage out there to the media. The media picks it up. They run it. They don't check.
Well, journalism's hard work, and the average person who thinks they're doing journalism in a TV station isn't. They're doing everything they can do to avoid doing journalism.
Well, that's true. That's true.
you know, but of greater, frankly, the greater, and I've talked about it at length on this program, BJ, the business with the windmills that are being opposed by CSX railroad-owned Greenbrier Resort.
Right.
That can't be seen, won't be seen, couldn't
right.
possibly be seen from the Greenbrier, unless they're planning on just buying up Greenbrier County.
Right.
That's an even bigger travesty.
It is.
Because, you know, I want to be green. We talk green. We've got a show featuring John Fox. He's green. He's in Australia. And he's trying to, he's trying to do the right thing. We're trying to talk about the right issues on this network. And here I am. Every blessed machine that I got running in this room is running off of coal, and I don't have any choice.
Right. And I tell you something, from a personal standpoint, and when I went down to Cayford Mountain the first time to see that mess around Larry Gibson, which for the probably a lot of the people that are listening right now know what that's all about, but it's just a huge mountaintop removal site that just goes on and on forever. 8,500 acres of ground tore up. I was so shook up when I left down there. We came home that day and sat down with our kids and said, we're going to change the way we do business in this household, okay? So we went out and we got the light bulbs, we changed all the light bulbs, got rid of the extra refrigerator, you know, we started turning off our computer monitors every time we got up to get a cup of coffee, you know. We did everything. Within four months. We had cut our electric bill by over 40%.
No kidding.
None of us in this house are feeling the effect at all. It has not changed our lifestyle one bit.
No, because all you're doing is being conscious of your surroundings. And I have, I'm known in this little family of mine for my occasional hissies. And I, you know, I don't hesitate to call my kids over, and I'm not going to do it myself because I know the right thing to do. I'm trying to teach here,
mm-hmm.
and say, you know, you left your bedroom and the radio's running and the light's on.
Right.
One of you get in here and turn them both off until you go back again.
Right.
And then I look at them and I say, you know, I've showed you the pictures. We've seen the sights. You've seen Marsh Fork Elementary. They blow up schools because you won't turn out the damn lights.
That's right. And I'll just make a confession. I had just been negligent for a long time and not paying attention. Okay? Not paying attention. I tell people all the time, growing up where I grew up, which was in Pocahontas County, right on the banks of the Greenbrier River, right on the edge of the Monongahela National Forest, it's just, as far as scenic beauty, it's about all you could ask for. Okay?
Paradise.
It is. It's paradise. And there are lots of people living in counties in the eastern part of the state that live in that kind of a paradise. And that paradise is a great insulator. Okay? We didn't hear about mountaintop removal. We didn't know this was going on. We never saw even strip mining in our back door. Okay? So all of a sudden you come out and you're confronted with this. And sometimes, I told Nanette, I feel tremendous guilt sometimes that I sat on my duck all these years and did not know about this, okay? And here I was just, you know, turning on the lights and not paying attention. And so at some point in time, you have to stand up once you have the knowledge. You have to stand up and take responsibility for your actions, and you have to take a responsibility to try to do something, you know, regardless of what it is. It can be just writing a letter to your congressman. But something, if you have any thought at all about this, you have to do something. And I'm trying to do something.
Well, you're doing a lot. As long as you've got time, I want to talk about the films and so forth here in a little bit. I want to go ahead and sort of keep on track, if it's humanly possible for me to do so. I'm pathetic.
I have a real hard time with keeping on track.
But we came down off the mountain. And lo and behold, let's set the stage for people.
Okay.
Where we were is a chunk of land that sits as the crow flies maybe 2 miles from the new river.
Right.
which is a national scenic river. It's a national park for all intents and purposes.
Right.
On the other side is the Gauley River, one of the wildest whitewater extravaganzas in the eastern United States.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to do this right in the middle here. So, obviously, this is a tourist area. There are big, beautiful sandstone cliffs for rock climbing, whether you do it with ropes or whether you free climb, yada, yada, yada. There's mountain biking. There is hiking, rappelling, fishing, horseback riding. You know, every kind of green sort of outdoorsy eco-endeavor you could want to engage in.
And the great Bridge Day.
Oh, yeah, and Bridge Day. Yeah.
Which draws thousands of people.
Yeah, to watch people jump off a perfectly good bridge.
Right.
But there's all of this. So this little town, Anstead, is trying to maximize its tourist panache, shall we say.
Sure.
And we come down off the mountain, and they're having a pancake breakfast at the VFW hall.
Right.
And the pancake breakfast is being sponsored so that tourism students who study tourism management, tourism economics, from WVU, West Virginia University, Morgantown,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole gaggle of them there in the VFW, and they're passing out little surveys about tourism in Anstead.
Right.
And we, poor Maureen, she had, you know, she just sauntered up to our little table, you, me, my son, and Nanette sitting there having our pancakes.
And what a sweet little gal she was.
Oh, she was. She was. And, bless her heart, I felt kind of bad after, because we all just sort of looked at her like, you know, are you nuts? Tourism? Do you know where we've been? Do you know what's happening here? And
right.
You know, she honestly didn't know diddly about it, did she, BJ?
No, she didn't. And I really felt sorry for her, you know.
And to be fair, neither did any of her other classmates.
No, they didn't. And, well, I tell you what, when I left, of course, you and Nanette and I did a pretty good job of educating her, I think, and sending her back to the U with a mission, with a question.
Yeah,
but Diane Deneau puts it really, really well. Tell us the truth, okay? Regardless of how bold it is, she says, tell us the truth, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They could have been truthful with them, all right? They could have told them that they were going down into what is about to become the pit of hell, okay?
Yeah.
And then they could have gone down there and asked them very legitimate questions, couldn't they?
Sure.
Sure. But no, it was like just smoke and mirrors.
But, you know, they also could have gone to the folks at Amvest in Charlottesville, Virginia, and said, you know, look, we're trying to develop a tourism plan for Anstead. How's our tourism plan going to work in with 120,000-pound gross vehicle weight, 140,000-pound gross vehicle weight coal trucks with big hunks of coal flying off of them and coal dust being
right.
stirred up all the way through the town? How's that going to work for the whole tourism plan there, Mr.
That's
CEO?
Right. That's right, and in case anybody out there that's listening is wondering how big of an operation we're talking about here, Talison Coal Company owns 18,000 acres of ground over there, okay? Now, it's taken them a good 100 years to, you know, to land grab all that 18,000 acres, but that is a lot of ground.
And it probably wraps around... The way the Gauley flows, it probably wraps all the way around to the back of Anstead, and on out toward where I am.
I was talking to somebody today and told them that figure, and they said, "Well, wait a minute, let's put some math to that. Let's see if we did that in a square, okay, which is 5 by 5." And he was doodling in his head, and he said, "You know, that's like the biggest chunk of Cleveland, Ohio. If you took that amount of square ground out of Indianapolis, the city would be almost gone. You're talking a huge amount of land." And so to talk about tourism, Anstead is going to be severely, severely impacted. And not only are they going to be severely impacted, but so is every offshoot tourism adjunct that comes out from that. You know, we talk about the Midland Trail and all the places along the Midland Trail, all the way from Huntington to the Virginia line. You know, and trying to connect those places so that when people travel Route 60, they stop not only at Hawk's Nest and the New River and Anstead and all these places, they come on down and they stop in, you know, Rainell, Rupert, wherever they stop, they come on down all the way down to Lewisburg, they go on down to White Sulphur and, you know, and they go to the Greenbrier River Trail and all these places. What's it going to do?
You know, from time to time, especially on like Memorial Day, Labor Day, things like that, we have great, humongous convoys of bikers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of neat to watch and hear those loud pipes, you know. And
biking thing's big industry these days.
Sure it is. And they love to use the Midland Trail because there's been a lot of work done to put them onto that road.
Right.
And what biking organization, what club, what group, what individual is going to want to ride 80 miles of road breathing coal dust?
Well, that's
right in your face.
And passing, meeting, you know, one overweight coal truck a minute, you know, you can't drive the thing anymore at all without just, you know, they're running you off the road.
So, BJ, you said, you know, you kind of feel guilty and you regret that you only got after the issue when you did.
Yeah.
What do we say to, and you know, this wasn't one of the things that, and you were there, you heard me, that I brought up to the tourism student. What do we say to the industries that live and breathe by all this natural wonder? The whitewater companies, the adventure companies, the outdoor outfitters. What do we say to them to get them into this fight? Because it is in their backyard now.
It is in their backyard. And I was thinking about this today. I had a friend that called me on the phone and was asking the same kind of questions. We were just kind of mind-boggling over it. Because
some of them are out-of-state interests, too, but, you know.
Yeah, some of them are, but so many of them are local interests. You know, I've been trying to tell people in Lewisburg, we've got a mountaintop removal site just been permitted over around Rupert. And it's a big permit. And I tried to get people to write letters to the DEP to request a hearing. I tried to get people to pay attention to the fact that this was going to, you know, affect tourism here, and people just like, oh, that's really horrible, and then just walk right off and go on their merry way, whatever it is they do, you know, back to work, back to watching Fox News, whatever it is they're doing, and pay no attention. So is it denial, Bob? Is it, don't want to fight this battle, you know, if it really happens, then we'll fix it, we'll clean it up. People are, you can't clean this up.
You know, there was one very cynical thing that occurred to me, BJ, and that is this. If you look at the runoff patterns and you look where the filth is going to go, it's all downstream from anything that they care about.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Because if it runs off into Mill Creek, Mill Creek empties into the New River below the takeout, where the rafters and the kayaks get out. And if it goes into the gully, it flows into the New and forms, and the New and the gully run together to form the Kanawha, and that's down below where they care about for their whitewatering.
Right. Maybe it's like if it's affecting my neighbor, so what? So what?
But I tell you, I think we've got a real chance here, and I don't know who the person is to do it, BJ, but we need to approach these outdoor companies, because they are the one industry that has the money to battle back. You know, you do what you do, I do what I do. God knows the tireless efforts. No, we're poor as Job's turkey and brokered in Ten Commandments.
You got it.
But you know, the tireless efforts of folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, OVEC, Highlands Conservancy, all of these organizations. The one thing we can't do is we cannot win. We can't even fight in. Never mind win. We can't even get on the field of battle in the media wars.
No, oh no, we never will. I don't think.
The only hope I have, and this kind of stirred in me on Saturday. I don't know how we get it built, but we need an embassy, if you will, of people who will call a meeting of the whitewater operators. and say, listen, this is your business. Now, if you just feel like you've gotten enough money out of West Virginia and that's all you need and you're ready to pack up and go home, then, you know, let's do it now. But if you want to continue to do business, you better get busy with us and you'd better fund it. And you better get in, and you better get in the media war, because you're getting your butt whipped because you're not even in it right now.
Right, right. You know.
Because it's not just those 18,000 acres back of Anstead, BJ.
Oh,
it's all the way down Route 60.
It's all the way down. Because once they start reaching, they'll just keep grabbing. You know how they do. They get an initial permit, and then the next thing you know, they're applying to expand. So it just keeps right on going. They own most of the state, this part of the state, anyway. You know, an idea, Bob, might be to throw it out there for us to start talking with the historical preservation people in Anstead. Nanette, you know, you were sitting there when we were talking. She said, "How come we're not getting the word out?" Do you remember what the girl said from WVU? She said, "Is anybody doing anything to get the word out about this?" You know, did you see Nanette? She almost dropped on her face.
Yeah, I did.
You know, we've been fighting this for 20 years, and somebody asks you a question like that, and you have to wonder, what have we been doing wrong? Maybe with the Whitewater people, it is a matter of one door at a time, face-to-face sort of thing. But maybe the historic preservation people, because I don't think the tourism people in Charleston are going to help on that. And I think the movement's going to come from within the local community. What do you think of that?
Well, it absolutely has to. And, you know, we saw a lot of, and I don't mean this as any slur or insult. I really, really don't. No. We saw a lot of fairly well-heeled people up on the hill.
Yes, we did.
I saw, well, there was my son, and I think there was one other child.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of folks of a certain age, shall we say. I didn't see a lot of folks my age, and you know, I'm no spring chicken. I'm 44.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of 20 somethings.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's got to happen there, BJ. It's got to happen with those generations.
That's right.
And it's got to get outside. It's got to get outside the civic leader class too.
Well, it does. It does, because as a whole, they're pretty easily swayed, and sometimes they're very gullible. And I reached out to the Midland Trail Association a few weeks ago.
And a good friend of mine is the president of that organization.
Well, she's a good friend.
Okay, not she. Okay, but a good friend of mine's involved. I think past president or something.
Okay. Well, so I thought, well, for sure, when I send her this, she's just going to jump the wagon. Well, I went to the Midland Trail's new website. Well, the welcome to the website has a big picture of Governor Joe Manchin.
Well, of course it does.
Well, I didn't hear anything back at all. Nothing. I kept emailing, made a couple of phone calls, got no response, no nothing. Very unusual for me not to get a return call from that group. And my guess is that they're not going to do anything. If they were, they already would have done. But I haven't heard from them, have you?
Not a blessed word.
No. No. And I don't think any of the people that are fighting this down in Anstead, the group that we saw on Saturday, I don't think, I know they haven't heard from them either.
You know, I saw Denise Giardina there. And
yes.
She traveled all the way from, what, Huntington?
Yeah.
To be there with us. Nanette was there. Nanette was there from down Coal River way. You came all the way from Greenbrier County. There are people who understand and know and get this, but and it's the same. It's one of the same dynamics that we fight on a daily basis here on this network, BJ, and that is defeating or attacking or trying to break the idea, not the actual fact of, but the idea of isolation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because there are thousands of people listening to this program or who will listen to it on their iPods in the morning or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they're individuals. They're individuals in their cars or, you know, there's some in West Virginia, there's some in Oregon, there's some in Washington State, some in California. And we feel very disconnected from each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we need some way to harness that creative energy, that spirit, that ethereal stuff, and bring it all together at one time, and that's a great hurdle. People are, you know, you see, like you said, the big picture of Joe Manchin on the Midland Trail Association website. Well, they're scared to death of him.
Right.
I mean, this is not because of admiration. This is because of fear. Nanette told me the story of the folks at the Friends of Coal Bowl, and you may have heard that. But a couple of youngsters went to the Friends of Coal Bowl, you know, Marshall and WVU, and they were passing out flyers about mountaintop removal, and they actually got one into Joe Manchin's hands, and he looked down at it and turned around and snarled and said, "West Virginia needs coal." Yeah, we need coal. We need coal like a junkie needs his fix.
That's right. And I tell you,
we got to get clean, and that doesn't mean clean coal technology.
No. No, and that's the new propaganda that's going out there, and that's another thing that people need to be educated on. You know, Vivian's right. There's no such thing as clean coal. Talk about an oxygen.
But we have in a way sort of crapped in our nest, because by taking very public stands against things that are the heart and soul of the raison d'etre or whatever, for our congressional delegation, our governor, virtually all of our entire state house, we have cut ourselves off from political power.
That's right.
Now,
don't you think they count on that? They count on you thinking about that so you won't?
Sure.
Get out there and raise your voice? It's another example of that victimization. This state, these people, and not just in West Virginia, but in all over Appalachia, been victimized for over 150 years, okay? They don't even recognize victimization now when they see it, okay?
That's true.
I'm going to equate it to slavery sometimes.
Well, yes.
Yes.
I mean, my forebears didn't get paid money when they worked in the mines.
That's right.
They got paid funny money. They got paid stuff that would not be recognized by a bank. You couldn't deposit it with a bank. You couldn't spend it in a store in Charleston. You could only spend it on the plantation for all intents and purposes.
That's right.
Sounds like slavery to me.
That's right. That's exactly what it sounds like to me. Yes, I don't think there's any difference. I really don't. And that's why when I see a website from somebody like Amvest in Charlottesville, it just crawls all over me. It's like, you know, I'm sick of the CalPRICE used to call it the Virginia Big God nonsense. He used that in terms of slavery and how that attitude continued on, you know, for another 100 years. But that's the way I think of it, Virginia Big God nonsense.
Well, I started the program, this being Veterans Day and all, BJ, I started the program just by sort of remembering the fallen and those who had served.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed it, but when you drove through Anstead, you drove past a little tiny veterans memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And the names of everyone who has ever served are in bricks on that pavement,
mm-hmm.
With a special strip of bricks reserved for those who gave their all. And as I drove by it on Saturday, and I remarked on it at the beginning of the program, the idea that brand new, and it's brand new, it's just finished, that brand new Veterans Memorial is going to be caked in coal filth. What kind of dishonor do we do to our veterans?
Well, that's right. And do you know Jim Foster down in Bob White?
Mm-hmm.
Jim's, he's a veteran, 79 years old. And what he said to me just a couple of months ago, he gave me his military history. And he said, "I fought for my country. I put my life on the line to defend my country. And now I can't even defend my own home." And he was talking about mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
And that was a sad moment to hear him say that. And I know we have lots of veterans that feel the same way.
Well, my father was one. He, you know, I would show him pictures and stuff toward the end of his life, and he would say, and he said those very same things. You know, this is what we fought for.
Right, right. And I think We got time for me to tell a little story?
We got all the time you want, BJ.
A lot of people remember the, I call it a disaster, the disaster at Harmony Falls, when those men were trapped in that coal mine over there from that flood of water that came through there.
Mm-hmm.
And four of them died. Not quite enough for them to label it a disaster.
No, that takes five.
It takes five. That's right. It takes five.
Sorry, you were one short.
But one of the men who was in there was Junior Moore. A lot of people may have read about him in the Gazette. I think Kara Tuckwiller did a story a few months ago. And he lived in Pocahontas County, and he was a real good friend of my family's, and he and his daughter and I went to high school together. And that was when coal mining really showed its ugly face to me, because I was like junior high age. And he was trapped in that mine for all of those 12, 13 days, and, you know, nobody knew if they were alive or dead. When they finally got the survivors out of there, he was the very last one that was taken out. And I'm almost sure that he was a veteran. Almost everybody of that age, you know, in President's County was a veteran.
Sure.
And after that mine accident, he had health problems for the rest of his life, okay? With, you know, breathing problems, back problems, everything. They were cramped up in there in that water for so long. And he and his wife, they literally fought for the rest of his life trying to get any sort of health benefits to help take care of him and his family. It was an ongoing battle that he never totally won when he died. And I think about that sometimes, and I think about these people that talk about the mine jobs and how the miners need jobs, and you all are trying to put miners out of work. For the biggest part, they have been victims from the day the first train rolled into West Virginia to do the land grabbing and get out the coal.
Mm-hmm.
And it breaks my heart, you know, when I think of veterans who are gone and veterans who are still with us that worked in the mines all those years, and they have nothing to show for it but broken backs and black lungs and, pardon me, a union that has forsaken them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a union supporter, okay?
Yeah, me too.
But it used to be I actually quit college. Took a sabbatical and then just never went back when they had the big miners' strike back in the early 70s. And the food banks that the union ran had run out of food. The miners were on strike so long, they had nothing to feed their families. So George Daugherty and a whole bunch of people said, well, let's get Arnold Miller in here and John Prine. Let's all go down to the theater down on the west side of Charleston, have a big fundraiser, and we'll raise money and have people to bring food. And so we did, and I got involved in that, just never went back to school, got involved in that thing. But my gosh, we were just, you know, we were raking in boxes of spaghetti and cereal and, you know, cans of tomato soup like crazy. And I think about those days, you know, the miners fighting for their rights and fighting for good wages and safe working conditions and the union being there for them. And now people tell me that the union, that all of the food banks that the union used to run in West Virginia have been shut down. They have no place to go for help at all. So where am I going with this? I guess where I'm going is that the miners that we hear complaining to us today, they're not the miners of yesterday, okay?
No, they aren't. The heavy equipment operators of Massey and places like companies like Amvest, they don't know that. They feel like they've got a God-given right to make $60,000 a year, buy a new truck every five, you know, put a swimming pool in the backyard, whatever, and that the mountains exist for their comfort and well-being.
That's right. That's right. And pardon me. And to hell with the rest of us.
And to hell with the rest of us.
Right.
And if you say anything about it, they'll threaten your life like they did Maria Gonneau.
That's right. That's right. And you know what? They get away with it. Did that make the front page of the paper? That should have been on the front page of all the papers. You know?
Yeah.
If I had gone to a ball game and made a threat like that, or I had gone and done what some of those jerks down there did, well, I tell you what, they would have jacked the jail up and put me underneath it. And they would have you, too.
Sure.
But they did nothing.
I mean, a lot of us have seen the video footage of the protest in Charleston where people were dragged out by the state police for simply asking questions.
Absolutely. 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 I was listening to a song the other day that George Daugherty and a friend of his sang in a concert over in Ireland, and it was a song about, all of the war and the turmoil in Northern Ireland and the burned-out bars and, what had happened to the town I loved so well. You know, the men in the guns and, mm-hmm. The tanks. And I'm thinking to myself, this really makes me think of what went on in the Capitol down there that day.
Yeah.
What have they done to the town I love so well?
Well, this is...
Warfare, Bob.
It is.
You used that word the other day, and you were so right.
It's warfare, it's ethnic cleansing, it's everything that we're willing to go to war in a foreign land over, and it's being done here.
That's right.
And, this is a nice little segue into what you do, BJ. Patchwork Films, Mountain Morning, you're doing everything in your power to get this stuff out into the hands of people who can see it and will then act on it. How many copies, if you don't mind me asking, how many copies of Mountain Morning have you got out there?
You won't believe this. Over 3,000.
No kidding.
And I really think that is incredible. Because when we started that little thing, my husband and I were actually burning the DVDs and printing the covers down here in our basement, okay? I actually work practically out of my laundry room, okay? And we were reeling these things off, and Christians for the Mountains took in enough donations that we could get 1,000 DVDs. So we did. Well, they went out the door like crazy. Of course, we gave a lot of them away. We've given a lot of them away.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to take in enough money to order again. And and then again, we actually had a third printing. So we have gotten those things out into the churches all over this country. They've gone as far as Norway and Finland.
Speaking of Norway, there was a Norwegian film crew there this past Saturday.
It was exciting to see them down there.
Well, it was, and yet at the same time, I kind of scratch my head and say, what have we come to? You've got Norwegian public television coming to America like 50 years ago they would have gone to a third world country.
Right, and you can't even get the local newspaper to show up.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that picture?
Well, because we are a third world country.
We are. We are, and our government and the coal industry treats us like third class citizens, and I don't know about you, but I'm just high tired of it.
Well, I am, and I had a... And let me take a minute while we're talking. If anybody in the listening audience wants to call in and talk to you, BJ, you don't have a problem with that, do you?
No, that's fine.
If you want to chime in, ask a question, make a comment, that's fine. You know the phone number. Third world country. Nanette and I were talking a few nights ago about political representation in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And we have none.
We have none.
And I don't know if people understand that. And frankly, I often wonder if people listen to this program and go, "Oh God, he's doing the mountaintop removal thing again."
That's okay.
But you know what? I'm going to keep doing the mountaintop removal thing, BJ, because this impacts a lot of people who don't know that it impacts them.
That's right. That's right. Someone said to me the other day, I think it was Judy Bonds. Judy Bonds always says from Coal River Mountain Watch,
mm-hmm.
always says to people that are not in the know, it's happening here now, but I'll guarantee you that eventually it's going to be in your backyard no matter where you live. And that's really true. It's going on in Alabama. They're doing mountaintop removal down there.
Yes, they are.
It's going on out in the west, Nevada, Arizona. They're just not mining for coal in some of those places.
Copper pit, or, I mean, Arizona has its own humongous problems.
Right.
But you know, look at the water resources. The New River rises in North Carolina, flows north through Virginia into West Virginia, joins with the Gauley to form the Kanawha, which flows into the Ohio, the Mississippi, and boom, you know, there the watershed of more than 2/3 of the country.
It's the drinking water of the eastern United States.
Yeah, the Coal River flows into the Kanawha.
Mm-hmm.
And all these valley-filled streams are literally, if you think about a human body, you know, the little teeny-tiny capillaries. Those little streams rolling out of the heads of hollers,
right,
in between the mountains, those are the capillaries of the body that is this continent.
Right, right. And if you want to, and I know this may be a little bit off the subject of mountaintop removal, but it does have to do with the coal industry. Speaking of water, this thing that's going on right now with the abandoned mines, I don't know how many, yes, I do know how many, Pocahontas Land Company down in southern West Virginia, gosh, they own something like over 400 abandoned deep mines. Most people don't realize that these deep mines sit and they fill up with water.
Yeah.
Okay? And every time we end up with a humongous flood, which is normally caused from all of this filling in of the valleys by the valley fills, all of those deep mines, those concrete tops or however they seal them, they just burst open. And this water goes pouring, it floods communities all over the place. It's full of toxins. Unbelievable toxins. And now down in McDowell County, they're literally, the state development office now has actually put our tax money into a fish farm.
Oh my God, I know.
Yeah, where they are growing fish that they're shipping to fine restaurants in New York City.
Arctic char.
Yeah, and these fish are being grown in
coal fields.
Runoff from this abandoned mine. Now, how crazy is that?
I like mine fried. I don't know. Maybe you like yours baked.
I like mine fried too. I know it's unhealthy as can be.
Yeah, but I like mine with just a soupçon of manganese. You know, maybe a little bit of lead.
Oh yeah, right.
You know, just like Mama used to make.
Oh yeah, and lots of mercury, right?
Exactly. Got a couple of callers on the line, BJ. First of all, and he's on a cell phone, so I'm going to him first, and then we've got Nanette. We've got our good friend Alan, the over-the-road truck driver. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hello. It's a very important subject you're talking about this evening. I feel like that everybody needs to know about it. Get people outside of West Virginia stirred up about it. I think it would be a good idea, just what you're doing this evening. And I've seen the mountaintop removal in Alabama. It looks pretty bad to see it from Highway 78 between Birmingham and Memphis.
Yeah, and it's never going to look any better, Alan.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So it is a reality in Alabama.
What'd you say?
I say it is a reality in Alabama, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's horrible looking. I just wonder why they're not putting windmills up on top of those mountains. Or if they're putting windmills on top of mountains everywhere else out west.
Well, we were trying. There's a couple of companies out there. I'm trying to remember the name of the company in Greenbrier County. Do you know?
Invenergy.
Yeah, they were trying. It was 200 plus windmills, Alan. But our congressional delegation is trying to move heaven and earth to stop it.
Yeah.
It's not like they ran out of money and can't do it. It's being actively stopped by
people. I think I heard you say that they had to do an environmental study to put windmills up.
Right.
Did you say that one time?
Yeah. And in fact, the legislation that was proposed would increase the difficulty of putting in windmills via those environmental impact studies. Am I correct, BJ?
Yeah, that's the way I understand it. They worry about such things as bats. They don't worry about us.
Yeah.
Off the top of the mountain.
Right. That's the thing. You can permit a mountaintop removal operation faster than you can permit a windmill.
I don't see how the windmill could hurt anything.
Well, it can't. I mean, the last I checked, if you get a postcard from Holland, most chances are it's going to have a windmill on it with a bunch of tulips.
Yeah, that's right. And people don't understand that, you know, when the windmill is eventually replaced with, say, a smaller structure, or when that windmill is no longer feasible and they have to remove it, it's a matter of dismantling it and taking up a concrete pad. And you haven't heard anything.
Yeah, the windmill, that'll just keep producing energy. Once the coal's gone, that's all.
Right.
It's about to go, and the tourists don't want to come up here.
Where do you live, Alan?
I live right out of Birmingham.
Birmingham?
Yeah, Birmingham, Alabama.
I've got a brother that lives way south of you down in Red Level, Alabama.
Red Level?
Yes.
Close to Mobile, I think.
That's right.
Right.
Right. Yeah, so I'm pretty familiar with Alabama. You probably truck through West Virginia quite often.
Oh, I did last night, and I found an easy way to make a bumper sticker. You just get some paint, a paintbrush, and some paint, and some duct tape, and you just write your message on the duct tape and then stick it on the back of the vehicle. And I drove through West Virginia last night, and my duct tape, I painted on here, it said, tourists love mountaintops.
Oh, good one.
Yeah, I got your email, Alan. That's great. And, you know, the fact that it's homemade and so forth adds a level of credibility to it.
Yes, it does.
and BJ, just so you'll know, Alan is an artist as well. He's a whale of a painter.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, we have a particular fondness for artists.
Alan and I got together for breakfast a couple of weeks back, and I walked him through Tamarack just to see that side of West Virginia. And you know, the fact of the matter, Alan, tell me what you think. If you're going to have an arts community and you're going to have a craft-oriented community, it can't live in the presence of the vileness of it can't thrive where mountaintop removal is, can it? I mean, from your perspective, do you think?
Yeah, it makes me think of, I think it's James Joyce, somebody wrote a poem, it was called The Wasteland.
Yeah, T.S. Eliot.
T.S. Eliot. That's what it makes me think of when you have a degraded environment like that. It just takes away creativity.
It does.
Have either of you seen that big new mountaintop removal site over at PAX, which is only about, well, it's probably only, what about?
That is a monster.
From Tamarack?
Yeah, that's a monster.
It's a monster, and I mean, as soon as you know, just before you come to it, you pass the big sign of what exit you're going to take to go to Tamarack, the best of West Virginia. And this is where the very best of all of our artists, are selling their goods. That's part of our economy. And that just is ludicrous to me.
Well, it is. And there's so much beautiful woodwork that goes on in there, or that's for sale in there. And you talk about, you know, the way they timbered these mountaintops. Look at what could have been made out of those trees you saw felled and burnt and bulldozed. Alan, it's awfully good to hear from you. Where are you right now?
I'm in South Carolina.
Huh.
Pretty close to the coast, I think.
Oh, well.
95.
Okay, so you probably got a little bit of decent weather going for you. Well, do you talk, Alan? Have you talked to other people and told them, you know, what you've seen, what you've heard, that kind of thing? What kind of reaction do you get?
Oh, everybody I talk to about mountaintop removal is dead set against. And I want to, the next time I see my father, who grew up in that area where you live, I'm going to show him some pictures that I download off the internet, maybe get him interested in doing something about it too.
Well, that'd be wonderful. You travel safely, Alan. Take care. Good to hear from you, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Alan.
All right, thank you.
Bye now.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Alan's mighty good people. And speaking of mighty good people, we have Nanette with us, BJ.
Oh, Nanette. Hey, BJ. Hey, love. How you doing?
Ah, pretty good. Good. I didn't ever get warmed up after Saturday morning, but after that I was fine.
It was a little brisk.
It was pretty cold on that mountain, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Yes, and it was really good to see you up there.
Oh, it was good to see you, too. It always kind of makes me sad, though, that we always have to gather for events like that.
I know it. I know it.
Doesn't seem quite fair that the coal barons and most of the rest of the country are running around having a good time, and this is what we're having to do.
Yeah, just like I said, I never dreamed in my later years that I'd be fighting for my life, you know? But that's what we're doing.
That's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. What's the situation down around in the immediate area where you live?
Well, it's same old, coal truck after coal truck, and today about 4:30, they're not supposed to be doing this, but there's a big blast went off. It shook the whole house. That was supposed to have been stopped.
Do you have damage at your house from the blasting?
The cinder block bottom on our house is cracked now. So, yeah. I think everybody around here, if they would really get down and look at their foundations and look around, they would see damage.
And I'm sure the coal company's not banging down your door to come in and make it right, are they?
Oh, Lord, no.
No. No.
No. I tell you, they want us out of here is what they want.
Well, that's what they want. That's what they want. And I tell people that all the time.
Well, we try to tell that young girl that, you know, that tourism student that. They want us out of here.
They do. They want us out, and then they can have the whole thing.
Yeah. Trash the whole southern part of the state and just get us out of the way, and they'll be perfectly happy.
There was, both of you remember her saying this, I'm sure, and it really touched a chord with me when she was talking about not knowing about mountaintop removal. And
that blew me away.
It did me, too. But then when she said that she really thought that if everybody in the country knew about this, that they would not be willing to sacrifice us for the nation's energy needs. And I thought about that. And I thought, you know, I really think she's right. It's just a matter of us figuring out how to get the word out to everybody in the country. And, gosh, it's not like everybody hadn't been trying for 20 years.
Well, the thing of it is, DJ, she's at WVU. She's in the state. As much as we've been out, as many letters have been written, as many protests as there's been, you know, she hasn't heard of it.
And isn't there a huge student organization at WVU?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where is she hiding? And I will tell you what I did tell her before I left.
What?
I said, sweetie, I hate to tell you this, but you need to change majors. Because
I didn't even
catch what tourism.
Well, I didn't catch what her major was.
Tourism.
It is
tourism. Tourism is her major.
Well, so she's kind of
she's from Cleveland.
Kind of flying through life with blinders on, maybe.
Well, she's from Cleveland. I found that out from her, and this isn't. I don't mean to goon on her or anything.
No, I'm not.
But there's a difference too. I mean, I'm a WVU grad, and that's a different world.
Yes, it is.
And it's not a world that often concerns itself with a part of West Virginia that it would rather not think about, unless you're in the mining engineering department, in which case it's all they think about, and how to ruin it, how to despoil it, how to destroy it.
I will tell you this. My son is at WVU in engineering school. They have 300 engineering majors that started this year, and only eight of them, went into mining engineering. So this isn't grabbing on to the young people like they would hope it is. But they certainly do pump a lot of money into the mining engineering school.
Well, and have for, oh, God, decades and decades and decades. I remember going into my geology class there, you know, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, and, you know, we'd go to geology class and see an actual dinosaur.
Right.
And there, you know, there was a Joy loader machine, you know, because the Joy coal equipment company had given, you know, oodles of money to the WVU Mining Engineering School, and that's the way it's. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure that there's tons of Massey money flowing in. I'd like to know about this Amvest Corporation. I'm looking at their website right now, Nanette, BJ.
Kind of creepy, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I've heard of Terry Eagle Coal before.
I have, yeah, too. I have heard of that.
And you know, they set these things up. These things are dodges, is what they are.
Right.
They're fraudulently established. They establish all these different companies. Well, for instance, you know, Powelton, that's owned by Amvest, went in and started, like we said, started mining that site without a daggum permit.
That's right.
And they confess. They confess on their website that they've been doing it for 4 years.
That's right. That's right. Blows your mind, doesn't it?
And now they're just going to expand it and make it a hell on earth.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And it's as far as a company like Amvest, who has a multitude of companies under them, okay, they both being an energy company, I believe. It's all about corporate profits and stockholder dividends. Whatever's good for Wall Street, whatever's good for the stockholder, you know, they're going to do it. And I'll tell you
another thing about, you know, how these companies do things, and it's really to confuse the public. This permit's huge, okay?
Yeah. But
we've got down here in front of my house 1,200 acres, okay?
Okay.
Well, it's all owned by Massey. But each permit that is permitted under a different name. You
right.
have Independence Coal. You've got Progress Coal. You've got Lake Third. You've got Lake Fair East. You've got Black Castle. And what they do is each one of these offshoots of Massey will get so many acres permitted that they all butt up and join together like a big puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling together. And each company says, well, 300 acres is not that bad. But when you get 5, 6, 7, 8 of these companies getting 300, 400 acres.
And they've all got a contiguous boundary somewhere, a common boundary.
And they all join together, and it makes one huge, massive area of destruction.
Right, right.
And I've got a 1,200-acre one in front of me. I've got an 1,100-acre one behind me. Boone County is just absolutely being leveled.
I guess the little tourism students aren't visiting Madison to ask people how they can enhance tourism to Boone County, are they, Nanette?
Well, I told the little girl, I don't know whether you heard me or not, Anstey is a beautiful little town. Well, so was Whitesville at one time. Whitesville mm-hmm. was a boom town. Mm-hmm. It had two movie theaters in it. It had a drive-in theater right outside of Sylvester, a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants everywhere, clothing stores, everything. Now it's boarded up. Madison, the same way. It was a boom town. They're ghost towns. They're shells.
Yeah, God knows, Welch, the entirety of Mingo County.
Right.
Williamson.
Oh, it's town after town after town.
But I told her, I said, you go down there and you look at the towns down where I'm from, where I live, and you come back here and look at Anstead, and you're looking at, you know, what Anstead's going to look like in 15 or 20 years. If that long.
Yeah, and you know, it's so sad. I did see one of the people I saw there was a lady who runs a business in Anstead, and it's garnered international attention. She makes salsa.
Oh, right.
Right there, right there on Main Street in Anstead. That business will go by the wayside.
Sure. Sure it will.
Because they ship and they pack and everything, but you know, ask Mary or Pauline down there at Coal River. Ask them how invasive coal dust is into their homes.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you how invasive it is.
Well, yeah, you can too, Nanette.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Here's one the listeners need to hear about. Speaking of Mary Miller and Pauline Canterbury down there in Sylvester, this just blew my mind. And Nanette, I'm sure you know about this. The dust collector.
Mm-hmm.
After they won their lawsuit against the coal company for the coal dust, then the court mandated that they hire a deaf expert to come in and set up a monitoring system so that the court would be able to know how much dust was falling on the town. So they send this guy down from, I don't know, University of Pittsburgh or somewhere, and he comes down there and he erects 6 poles in town, in various places.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts this metal cone on the top, and sitting down in the metal cone is one of these Rubbermaid jars, like you buy at Kmart.
Oh, my God.
With a screw-on lid on it. It's
yeah.
got a piece of paper in it. They put this jar down in the cone with the lid on. That's
on.
The dust collector.
On?
Well, yeah. With the lid on it.
Okay.
They had no intention. They had no intention, it's obvious, of ever monitoring the coal dust. Just pulling the wool over people's eyes.
Well, they just like the seismic monitoring from the blast.
Mm-hmm.
When they came and put the monitors in the ground, they put foam rubber around them.
They put what?
Foam rubber.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
To absorb the shock.
It doesn't end. It just doesn't
no,
end, does
it's
it?
Just, it's
you know, in the time we've been talking, I did wander over on the internet to amvestcorp.com.
Okay.
And, you know, they got that beautiful picture there of their little operation, God only knows where it is, and there's the autumn leaves in front of it, and it just looks so tidy, their coal operation.
Oh, yeah.
Then you click on corporate information, and there's a little map. It shows their holdings. And there's 4 dots in West Virginia. Terry Eagle, Fola Little Eagle, the Vaughan Railroad, Mineral Services, and Powelton. All of it's in West Virginia. They got and they've also got an operation in Oklahoma. The only thing that's in Virginia is their corporate headquarters, and there's a picture of that, too.
That's
well,
right.
I've
that's
heard of Fola. Where is that?
It looks like it's probably, I'd guess maybe Webster County.
Okay.
But there's a picture of their corporate headquarters, and I know, talking about pictures on the radio is like dancing about architecture, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's this beautiful structure looking over a man-made lake. And you can see the reflection of the building, and it's got a sort of faux Greek Revival portico on it.
Oh yeah.
And a big white plinth above the columns, and lots of glass and skylights. Looks like it was built pretty green, actually.
It's the modern Thomas Jefferson look.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's just gorgeous. And the only holding that Amvest has in the state of Virginia is their corporate headquarters.
Ah, but the state of Virginia gets all their corporate tax money, don't they?
To the extent that they impose them, yes.
Sure, exactly.
They've got them
for the coal severance taxes.
Don't get me started.
Trying to get that repealed, huh?
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that thing.
Oh, I know.
And they've even got one of those hoity-toity carry me back to old Virginia addresses too.
Yeah.
They are located at 1 Boar's Head Pointy. They put an E on the end of point. It's a pointy. 1 Boar's Head Pointy,
mm-hmm.
Charlottesville, Virginia.
Right.
It's just charming. You know, I look at this photo, and I can just imagine men in frock coats walking
right.
on the lawn drinking mint juleps
right.
while, you know, while communities in West Virginia die.
Right, exactly. That's the way you feel.
You know, I'd like to go over there and look at the CEO and go, no. Why don't you move into the house that my father was born in at the foot of the mountain you're destroying?
Oh.
And tell me about the good life.
Let me tell you something, Bob. At one of the informal hearings we had down here at Batona, we had a big one. And, of course, they had the people from Massey there. They had the people from the DEP there. You know how have you ever been to one?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we said, why don't you guys move down here? We asked them, where do you live? They said, Tays Valley. Well, yeah, Tays Valley, yeah, sure, that's a big, greasy butt. You know, big homes
mm-hmm.
down in Tays Valley. That's a long way from here. And that one guy said, well, let's not get personal about it. And I thought, well, don't get personal.
You dirty little...
Lies, and you say, don't get personal?
Right.
Yeah, you're not making it personal. They made it personal.
Right.
Whoever it is over in Oak Hill that approved this monstrosity behind Anstead, they made it personal.
That's exactly right, Bob. Yes, they did.
They went. There's somebody that thinks he's a fellow countyan of mine, a neighbor of mine, who has actively gone to war against my children.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
And all the children at Anstead Elementary and Anstead Middle. And you know, and I've heard rumblings that, and you know it's directly related to this stuff. They're talking about building a mega school across the river so that my kids will have an hour bus ride to school.
Oh, man.
Because they know what's going to happen to this community. They're killing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the whole thing with building the big mega schools is so the, you know, the ZMMs down in Charleston and all these fat architecture cats can make lots of money off of designing and building the new school. They got one down in War.
Yep.
Right outside of War. They consolidated that middle school down there. They built a school big enough to hold 650 kids. The student population is 312, okay? You drive around. They don't even have a grocery store in McDowell County. They have to go out of the county to the grocery store. There are never going to be enough kids in that county to fill that school. Never. So why did they build it so big? Because the SBA would give them money, and they could all make a lot of money. It's all the same thing. It's always, always back to money.
The thing it is, if they don't spend the money, they got to give it back.
That's
right. That's how that works.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
Well, we keep coming back to this question, DJ, and Nanette and I discussed it last week, and that is figuring out some way to raise up and teach and train our own to become activists and to get into the political process and to change the politics of this state. Now, I don't know where that begins. I don't know if we go and find members of Congress or senators far, far away from West Virginia and say, listen, if you really think this is wrong, you need to get serious about it and you need to get behind helping people in West Virginia fight it.
Well, but, I think that's part of it. Now we have, you know, Frank Pallone up in Massachusetts who authored the, you know, the Clean Water Act.
And I love that, man. Me too.
And I saw today that there are 112 co-sponsors now.
Well, you know, BJ, when that started, Paul and I went up by ourselves, and we met in his office. And I took enough paperwork with me. There was not enough desk space, table space in his office for all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I spread it out on the floor, and I sat cross-legged in his office on the floor and showed them what we had here and what we were facing. And bless his soul for introducing this into the Congress.
Yeah. 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 One.
He cared enough. An outsider cared enough about us to do
mm-hmm.
this. We can't get our own representatives to even sign it.
No, and they're not going to. And we know why. They're beholden. I tell you, one of the things. Let's talk about movie for just a minute. That was my motivation behind this new film, Rise Up West Virginia. Is that it occurred to me that if I had been living isolated in my pretty little place for so long and didn't know about it, then that meant that there were thousands of people in West Virginia that were just like I was.
Uh-huh.
And so there had to be a way to reach out to let them know what was going on and try to call them to action. Julian uh-huh. Martin says all the time, we can't take everybody to Tayford Mountain. Well, I wish
no.
we could put them all on buses, like, you know, Rockefeller used to do with the senior citizens and bus them to the Capitol. But we can't do that. So my motivation was to use a film, take a personal journey in that film to show the people of West Virginia what it is we're looking at in that's covering half of this state and let them know that they've got to stand up and take action or they can kiss the whole state goodbye because it's all going to go down the tube. At some point, you have to stand up for yourself. If somebody else wins the battle for you, it's easy for it then to be taken away from
Precisely.
You.
Precisely.
You've got to fight
you,
it yourself.
if somebody does it for you, you are then beholden to them.
That's right. That's right.
So and you're still, you know, in servitude.
That's right. That's right. Which means it's same old, like it has been for 150 years.
Yeah.
And so I think that's part of what we have to do is we have to work really hard at getting people in West Virginia. I told you, Nanette, the other day that maybe we have to do it one door at a time. Well, maybe we do. Maybe we do. You know, whether it's banging on doors, calling them, showing them movies, whatever it is we do, I think they've got to rise up on their own because that's where the strength is going to come from.
Until that day happens, though, we need all the out-of-state help we can get.
Absolutely, and amen to that.
And that's what keeps the pressure on.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what keeps the pressure on Washington. We can't keep the pressure on our representatives. If I can just, I'll just throw a name out here. I don't care. I'm not beholden to the governor or any of them. None of them have ever cared about me or my family, okay? They don't care that we don't have health insurance, okay?
No.
So I don't care about them. I understand, and I cannot prove this, but I've heard from more than one source that Rockefeller's family, through the foundation or something, is one of the investors in Amvest.
Oh, my God.
I would doubt that a bit.
Now, I don't find that hard to believe.
I don't find it hard to believe either, BJ.
But sometimes when we wonder why one of our senators doesn't stand up and speak up for us, sometimes maybe it is a matter of money. Who knows?
Who knows, indeed. And I mean, and yet, look, this is that, and that's part of the political culture here. I mean, if you go to one of the big political shindigs, especially in the Democratic Party, you know, the very mention of certain names, Senator Byrd, Senator Rockefeller, will bring down the House with applause.
Sure.
Because it's what I call rock star politics.
That's right.
It's, you know, ooh, you're you. It's not you're my representative. You are my servant.
Right, Bob. They forget that.
But here we are, the recipients of the little crumbs that they scatter around. Okay, we're like little chickens grabbing at the little crumbs, you know, and everybody in the state is willing to overlook everything else as long as the crumbs keep coming their way.
Yeah. Now,
that's pretty pathetic.
Well, it is.
Now, I'll tell you what, we haven't found very many crumbs.
No, we haven't either.
You know, we've been told that West Virginia is open for business. We've been told that repeatedly.
Well,
yeah.
For what business?
Well, for what business? we've been told that, you know, well, you know, business is improving. You know, we had to destroy a fairly workable workers' compensation system so we could privatize it.
That's right.
And you know what? It's not working out so well.
No, it's not.
I caught a news story just passing through by where the TV box was earlier today of some little business owner in, maybe Huntington or something, hot dog stand.
Mm-hmm.
He's out of business. He's been there and become quite popular over the course of the last couple of years. Brick Street Private Workers' Compensation says that he never paid his premiums. He's got the canceled check.
Right.
He's out of business. They put him out of business.
Nobody's standing up for him, are they?
Nope, doesn't look like he's got much in the way of representation.
No. And neither do the 35% of the workforce in West Virginia that's unemployed. That's what the actual number is, 35%. Nobody's standing up for them.
No. And there was nobody really standing up a while. Now, this was a couple of years back. Remember the last big fight over, and you know, this kind of thing goes on in other states. If it's coal here, it's paper mills in the South.
You know what I mean?
It's oil and natural gas in Louisiana. You know, this stuff, this we talk about what we're experiencing and we put a local face on it. It happens all over the country because it's part of our bought and paid for political system. It's why it happens. But a few years back when I was still on bad old terrestrial radio, I had occasion to notice, and we were the only ones talking about it, during the fight over the paltry, pathetic, pitiful increase in severance taxes. I was virtually the only one who noticed that there was a hidden gotcha clause in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the it allowed it didn't inure directly to the coal companies, but it there was a provision in the law that allowed the power company to raise rates without having to go to the Public Service Commission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one hand, you know, you scratch mine, I'll scratch yours.
Wow.
The severance tax goes up, and the coal companies and the power companies get it back via passing it down to you and me without even so much as a buy your leave from the Public Service Commission.
That's right. That's right.
And
I picked up the local newspaper here in Greenbrier County 2 weeks ago, and the big headline was coal severance tax bails out the county budget or some kind of crap like that. And turned out that the county commission had they'd either overextended themselves or they had not calculated right. So they had all of these organizations in the county that had applied for, you know, the tourism, the bed tax money, for, you know, whatever it was, parks or recreation or, you know, whatever they'd asked for money for. And these people had been led to believe they were going to get their money. Well, they fell short. They didn't have the money. So all of a sudden, enrolled the coal severance tax money, and that's, the county commission made this huge deal listing all of these organizations in the county and how much money they were getting, thousands of dollars, okay, from the coal severance tax. So you see why they do that is to make the community feel like they are beholden to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, we got a check.
We can't live without it. We can't have the ballpark, okay, unless we have the coal severance tax. It's another way of keeping us enslaved.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It is.
We are a naggy bunch tonight, aren't we?
Well, no, we got a right to be cranky.
We do. We do. We're crabby.
But, you know, you're... You've done so much with your films, BJ, and God knows your involvement, Nanette, is ceaseless. You know, the way that you and Paul pore over these permits, I know there's got to be times that your eyes just the words just have to begin swimming in front of your face.
I would think so.
If there's, and this is a question for both of you, is there a list of priorities? Is there a step 1, 2, 3? To this whole thing, what needs to happen first? Overall, you know, mountaintop removal needs to end. It must end. It has to end, or else the Appalachians die. But how do you get about it? Do you see a? I mean, do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, I understand what you're asking. I have an idea, and my husband and I've been talking about this today, actually. I've just about concluded that we need to simplify the message. And I say that because, and I don't know if I'm right. I very well could be wrong. I've been wrong before. But when we talk, when a lot of us talk to people outside of West Virginia, say somebody who's never heard of mountaintop removal, and all of a sudden we're hitting them with, you know, denuded landscapes and mucked up water sources and sludge and slurry and blasting and all of these different things that wrap around this mountaintop removal monster, you can see their heads starting to swim.
Yeah.
Okay? And you give people too much information, you give them too many things to focus on, and all of a sudden it becomes this mush, and they just go home and turn on the TV and say, this is too big for me to even think about. So I'm wondering if at some point we all don't need to think about simplifying the message. They're blowing us off the map.
They're at war with us.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. And just keep pounding that message in. You know, they've waged war on us. They're attempting to blow us off of the map, and so far they're succeeding. Okay? And put out another call to action. I don't know. It just seems like it might be worth a shot. Nanette?
I agree. But there's one thing, even beyond the blowing us off the map, that worries me terribly. And it just doesn't affect us here in the Appalachians. It affects everybody all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. It's the poison.
Yes.
The toxin.
Yes.
That's going to affect everybody all along the Midwest, everywhere. It worries me to death. And you all were talking about, you know, the fish farming in the old mines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're using some of these old mines to inject the toxic sludge.
Yes, they are.
Everybody around here has their own well, but we can't use it. We can't use our own water. It's toxic. We can't use it in our home. And you know that it's in the groundwater, and I don't know how the groundwater runs. I'm not a hydrologist. I'm not a geologist. But it doesn't stay here under our house. It has to move. Where is it going to?
It's going to somebody else's backyard.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and well, that's what I was trying to get at with all the little streams that get buried in the valley fills. They get buried, but still this poison leaches.
Right.
And it leaches into the Coal River, it leaches into the New River, it leaches into the Gauley, it finds its way through the Kanawha to the Ohio, the Mississippi, and the next thing you know...
the Gulf of Mexico.
Right.
Well, and I tell you, here...
And where they mountaintop remove in Tennessee, those are the headwaters of the Tennessee River.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And people all across the country, I think, are really not... They're starting to become more aware of this crisis with our drinking water supply, but the country as a whole is... I don't think they're really aware of the seriousness of that issue. Drinking water is going to be... Safe drinking water is going to be a major, major thing, probably in another five. It's going to be huge.
You know, look where the Kentucky River flows. Yeah, here I am talking about look where on the radio again. I should be taken out and beaten.
People get a mental picture.
Imagine where the Kentucky River flows, Bob.
Yeah. Again, it flows into the Ohio.
Yeah.
Again, it flows through country that is being leveled, that is being poisoned, and frankly, the headwaters of which are being dried up. Now, Sonny Perdue, the governor of Georgia, right-wing fundamentalist that he is down there praying for rain.
Yeah, rightfully so.
And he's reduced to praying because they're not making any more water. Just like, you know, they're not making any more coal. You know, these are all finite resources. And yet, it takes eight times as much water to whatever coal you wash, you know, to clean it and prep it so you can transport it, takes eight times as much water as coal. This liquid fuel boondoggle that our congressional delegation and our governor are trying to hustle off on us takes 5, 6, 7 gallons of water for every single gallon of liquid coal fuel that they produce.
Exactly. Where's it going to come from, Bob?
Well, it beats the hell out of me, Nanette, because they're burying the streams.
What are they going to do with it after they contaminate it?
Well, they're going to put it in a mine somewhere.
Well,
out of sight, in the mine.
Yeah, down in Sylvester, from what I understand, down there they're even using the runoff from the slubs down to wash the coal.
Hmm.
Now, Pauline Canterbury told me that. I think she's probably right. You know,
yeah,
she knows more about coal than I'll ever know.
You know, it's a blessing. It's a blessing that these kids come from colleges out of state, North Carolina, places like that. To intern with Coal River Mountain Watch, things like that. These are the ones that they write about in the newspapers, the Logan Banner and so forth. You know, outside agitators.
Yeah, right.
They called me one of those. I wrote a nice little LTE in the Logan Banner.
Good for you. Yeah, outside agitator. Been here 300 years.
Yeah, right. Right.
But the thing is, and that's why I asked that priority question, how do we get into the schools? And it goes back to the question you asked about, or the statement you made about we've got to learn to do it for ourselves. You know, how do you get into Midland Trail High School? How do you get into Woodrow Wilson? How do you get into Capitol or George Washington?
I think you have to do it outside in. I think you have to go through the students, and they're the ones that have to go in.
I will tell you this: when we had our first Mountain Justice Summer You know, we had it here. And we did the walk from Gold's Coal down to Elk Run. We walked it. Well, Nancy had his minions out there. They were all in trucks that had Virginia license plates on them. They weren't from here.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had some of the teachers from Marsh Fork Elementary there mm-hmm. on the other side of the road heckling us. And I'll never forget this one. Now, folks, forgive me for what I'm going to say because it sounds ugly. But her rear end was as big as an elephant. And she had on tight pink stretch pants with dimples all over her rear end. She turned around and shook her hind end at us, and I thought, boy, you are some educated lady. You teach our kids.
And you're teaching our kids.
And that's what we have to look at when we're talking about getting into the schools. We got to get past that.
Yeah, you do, and you have to get past the textbook. I love the story that Maria Gonneau tells about the West Virginia history book, and then she's telling the truth. It's right there, the whole page on coal, talking about the reclamation, and basically what they're saying is that when we're done, it looks better than what God did.
Oh,
that's
absolutely
what they're saying. And she sent me a copy of the page, and I read it, and I thought, God, I cannot believe that our taxpayer money is going for this kind of propaganda to be the required text material in any curriculum in any high school.
Looks better than God did it.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at who appoints the superintendent over all the schools in West Virginia.
Yep.
It all runs right back down to the tyrant of the coal. The appointees that sit over all the different functions in our government are appointed, and it's paid for by coal.
That's right. That's right.
So I guess there is a little bit of truth in the notion that it keeps the lights on. Coal.
yeah, there is truth.
But not here, because Bob, the only light I have on in here is the monitor on the computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I type in the dark.
But it keeps lights on in funeral homes, coal does.
Oh yeah.
And it keeps lights on in the seats of power. And it keeps
down at the West Virginia School of Osteopathic Medicine, where they've got a new parking lot and a new building, and they got more lights in that parking lot than in all of the town of Lewisburg, and by golly, those suckers run 24 hours a day. You can go down there, and that building is lit up like a shopping mall in the middle of the night. Not a soul in that building.
Well, we have to conspicuously consume, BJ. We have to, because if conservation and common sense approaches to energy use and sustainability become issues here, Massey and CSX are screwed.
They're out of business. Yeah, they're screwed. Right. Right.
So, you know, consequently, got to have them lights on.
Yeah, right.
Well,
I think part of the message to people has to be, too, Char Miller. I don't know if you've heard of Char Miller.
Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor, a professor at Trinity University in Texas, and he wrote the best-selling book in 2003 called Gifford Pinchot and the Making of Modern Environmentalism. The new biography on Pinchot, and it just swept the country by storm. And I interviewed him. He's a good friend these days. And here's what he said about conservation. And my God, it's the best quote I ever heard in my life. This is what he said. Conservation does not mean you cannot hunt, or that you cannot fish, or that you cannot mine or cut timber. Conservation means that you do it in a new way, with respect for the land and with respect for the caring capacity of that land. And when I heard him say that, I thought that's the best description of conservation I ever heard in my life. If everybody had been practicing that all along, thinking about the caring capacity of that land, we wouldn't be in this mess right now.
No, I don't think so. You know, and the funny thing is, you know, this is a big hunting and fishing state.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, before any kid or any adult can, go wandering off into the woods in search of, you know, the big Boone and what is it, Boone and Travis standard buck.
Yeah.
You have to go through a hunter safety course.
Right.
And in the course of that instruction, they don't make any bones about, I mean, they teach you concepts like carrying capacity.
Sure.
But they teach it to you in terms of how many deer can exist on an acre, or how big a flock of turkeys.
Right.
I remember sitting through it, and it's and thinking, you know, we're teaching about carrying capacity of the land in terms of turkeys and deer, but we're not thinking about it in terms of humans, as though we were something, as though we can make the earth do our bidding.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. And we hear this all the time from the, you know, the coal company. Well, they have their workers to say this for them. They don't ever come out and say it. You know, that God put it here for us to take it.
Which is,
that's why he put it here. That's the biggest bunch of malarkey I ever heard in my life.
Which is a function of Christian dominionism, BJ. You're probably familiar with the term, yeah, or the topic. I give you the earth and all its domains for your dominion, and you shall take dominion of the earth.
Has been misinterpreted all these years.
Yeah,
we misinterpret that and we misunderstand it, and so then they use it, you know, to justify what they do. I kind of like Maria's line, you know, God put it in the ground because it was so filthy, that was the best place to put it and leave it.
Well, yeah, and there's so much truth in that. I mean, I was looking at that little outcrop that I mentioned earlier. All this beautiful growth, you know, I was talking to one fella, he said, you know, growing up, he said, I went ginsenging in these hills,
mm-hmm,
went hunting in these hills. There were bear here, there were deer, turkeys, grouse. And he said, you know, it's all getting run off.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, just a few feet down, you know, such that you could drive by it on the road, there is something that is so toxic,
yeah,
that it would kill every blessed thing, every last bit of life, if it were above ground.
Right. Right. And
so,
here's the thing that people that aren't faced with this every day, I don't even think they can get their arms around the toxicity of this stuff. You know, if you,
that's
if
true.
Yeah, I don't
it's
think they can get their arms around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And, you know, I think about the rising cancer rate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in young people.
Right.
And they said, well, what's causing this? You know, we can't figure out what's causing this. Well, we can pretty well tell them where it's coming from.
Well, it could be the water, you dummy.
Yeah.
Really and truly. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And that's the reason why I say the people outside of Appalachia don't know what they're being exposed to.
No, they don't. They don't.
They don't have any clue. Every time they turn on their tap or take a bath.
Or breathe the air.
They have no clue what they're putting in themselves. And it's coming right from the Appalachians.
It is.
And it's almost like a sort of bizarre revenge because, and I think I mentioned this before, I read somewhere that, you know, because the glaciation of the last ice age did not reach the area that is West Virginia and the Appalachians, that it was the Appalachians that reseeded the entire continent.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And now it may very well be the Appalachians that also host its destruction.
Very well could be.
Via global climate change and the coal. You know, the Tennessee Valley Authority. I grew up in Alabama and in the heart of the Tennessee Valley Authority. Big TVA installation. Bunch of my kids that I grew up with, you know, their daddies and their mamas worked over there. And it started out as a hydroelectric project. But they then expanded into things like coal-fired power plants. And, most of Massey's coal was bought by the TVA a couple of years ago. It was the only thing that saved them.
Right.
And so, it's Appalachian coal, and it's coming out of mountaintop removal operations. But you know what? It's going into the skies over Huntsville and Sheffield and Tuscumbia. It's going into the sky, you know, wherever
Canada.
Wherever there's a coal-fired power plant. in the southeast. Georgia Power, Alabama Power. They're burning Appalachian coal, and that crap is falling into their rivers, into their lakes, into their streams.
Aren't a lot of the forests up in New England dying from the acid rain?
Yes. Yes, they are.
So they're being affected by what's going on here, too.
And they're pretty upset up there.
Well, they are.
And I don't blame them. But look how long New England screamed and hollered about acid rain. And, you know, who was the very person in the Senate that kept fighting them was Senator Rockefeller.
Yeah.
He fought them tooth and nail. Well, they finally, you know, they finally won their battle up there, but would it take them 15 years?
You know, I don't think we have 15 more years.
I don't think so.
I know we don't. We don't have 15 more years.
That's why I told people down. The first time I went to Anstead, it was a few months ago, and they showed Mountain Morning down there, so I went down. And of course, when I get up in front of the crowd, I just, you know, let it rip.
I tell everybody BJ's a firebrand.
Oh, I like that word. I've never been called that before. That's good.
Yeah.
So I just let
that's
it rip.
Good.
But we were talking politics, and I think it was Mr. Hoffman or Mr. Huffman, one of the others, said, if we could just find somebody to run against these people. And that's what we were talking about. And so he said, what do you think we should do? And I said, well, regardless of whether we have, you know, whether we find somebody to run against them, I really think it's imperative that all of our elected officials, every one of them, every single one of them, right down to a local county commissioner, that the next time they come up for re-election, that they are voted against and that they are voted out. Because if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Well, that's an old one, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so someone said to me, well, what if Governor Manchin came out tomorrow and signed a moratorium on mountaintop removal? I said, you've got to throw him out of office anyway. You don't right your wrong by coming in and saying, okay, I'll let you have your way, because then what do? You put him back in office, and then as soon as he gets back in office, he takes the pen and he scratches through his signature and says, whoops, made a mistake.
Do over.
Right. Here's what?
Yeah. Well, you raise the issue, BJ, that informs so many of the issues that we talk about on this program and other programs here on the Horn, and that is the seemingly intractable problem of what happens in November, because and it's something I'm sure people are sick and tired of hearing me prattle on about.
Well,
but it's got to happen in the primaries.
It's got to.
Because by the time November rolls around, and I'm a prime example of this, what do I do in November when I walk in and it's Jay Rockefeller or some guy, as opposed to some guy who thinks that the Earth is 5,000 years old, that the planet, that the sun revolves around the planet, that it might be flat, and that his vision of God Almighty should determine what I get to believe and how I get to live my life. What in the world do I do in that position?
That's not an easy question. I tell you what, I think, me personally, I would do one of two things. I would either write in somebody.
I thought about that too, BJ.
Which I've done that lots of times. We could all write in the same person.
We'll write in Bob.
Oh, Jesus.
Or,
stop that.
I would vote for the guy that is totally off base in the hope that I could change his mind. Rockefeller's been there for so long, he's never going to change his mind.
No.
He's never going to look at anything in a different way. You know, it's just like Bob Byrd. My goodness, I love him. We all love him. He's brought a lot of pork to us, admit it, okay? But he's wrong on this issue. And this issue affects the longevity of this planet, and he won't say anything about it. And so I'll just go ahead and tell everybody, as much as I love him, if he runs for office again, I won't vote for him.
Well, I came down to that place too, and it looks like I'm looking at a leave it blank situation in November on Rockefeller's race.
That's
and God knows I've got a stack of issues. It's not just mountaintop removal.
No,
it's a statute.
Right.
It's habeas corpus. It's spying on Americans. It's the fact that he was on all the news shows when the Republicans had the Senate saying, oh, you know, why won't Pat Roberts of Kansas get the report out? He promised this report. He promised the report. Blah, 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 blah. Guess
right.
what? No report.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Senator Rockefeller's running the committee now. Well, you know, we're working with all deliberate speed. You know, no. No. And you know, the other side of the coin of what you said about, okay, I'll vote for the freak and just hope that I can defeat him the next time. Well, the 6 years that you, in the case of a Senate term, BJ, the 6 years that you give the freak, he's probably going to be a bigger coal whore than Rockefeller was.
Absolutely.
You know what we really need in this country? We need a legitimate third party.
That's the other problem, though, because as soon as there's an ascendant third party, it will become a second party, and it'll become a two-party system, and then it'll just be the Republicans rising up and killing the Whigs.
That the other ones have fallen into.
The money issue, you know, all the environmental groups are always very active in Charleston, every legislative term, trying to get clean elections passed.
Absolutely.
I think that's the heart and soul, and it's not just West Virginia, it's all over the country.
Right.
Until we clean that up, we're done for. And I don't know if we're going to see it in your lifetime or mine.
May not, but we may. We may.
It's certainly worth working on, because if we keep making progress, I can look at my 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and 13-year-old, and my 19-year-old, and my 6-month-old grandbaby, and I can say, okay, I've done what I can do, you're up, your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you dare drop the ball.
Right.
I got a question, and I have a hypothetical for you, for both of you.
Okay.
Okay, you know, Senator Byrd is very, very old, and he's in poor health. Okay, well, if next time he drops down, he says, well, I'm not going to run, if he lives that long. And Manchin runs in his place. Then what?
Well, first of all, I think Governor Manchin is planning, is sort of operating on the assumption that Robert C. Byrd will drop dead during this term, at which point he will appoint himself.
Yeah. Right.
But
right.
Whenever it comes down to actually voting for the man, I couldn't do it.
I couldn't either. I couldn't either.
I think he's worse than any of them. I swear, I believe Manchin is the worst thing that I've ever seen happen come out of this state.
Oh, I agree, and I have never seen. I tell people all the time.
And yet he's a juggernaut. I don't. He's
living in a dictatorship.
Do you know that we went to the Kerry rally, the first Kerry rally they had in Charleston at the Civic Center? It was packed. They weren't expecting near that many people, and they really, it was late getting started because they had to do all the security checks, but there were thousands more showed up than what they thought was going to. Manchin comes in pulling a float behind a vehicle. It was all glitter, lights, and streamers. And people were paying more attention to his float than they were Kerry.
Oh, yeah.
It was all glitz and glamour.
Yeah, and
look at me. You know?
The glamour factor.
Yeah. And then he got his mug up on the national TV during Sago.
Well, but before that, you know, he sat down and he went up to the little... womb control organization, West Virginians for Life, or whatever, and sat down and broke bread with those goons, and frankly was at great pains in 2004 to so much as admit that he was a part of the same party as John Kerry.
Right.
They didn't have any interest in promoting John Kerry in West Virginia because he. He was counting on being elected by a bipartisan majority, and it amazes me that this guy is going. You know, there's no doubt about it, B.J. Nanette. He's going to be reelected.
Yes.
There's nobody that's going to run against him with any kind of a campaign.
But he's not going to be reelected because we vote for him.
No.
No, yes. But that's cold comfort.
Well, I know that.
We'll
sleep better.
Yeah. You know, the Republican Party in this state is a mess, and frankly, for all they've been lately, they can just as well stay that way. And it goes back to my question about raising up our own class, our own people who are willing to run for political office.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's very difficult because...
And it does, well, it doesn't have to start at governor, BJ. It can be
yeah,
county commissioner.
It can start at county commission. It can start at the very lowest level. And that's where it probably has to start, because the good people don't have money to run. Okay?
Right.
They don't
that's
have
the problem.
Political, and they don't have the political connections to raise the money. Okay? So, you know, but then we have another problem too. We've got election board after election board across the state, where all of the poll workers have now been replaced by employees of the local school board. Okay, so you know, no doubt elections are they're just being stolen, and we've got a real clean election problem. You're right.
You know, there's one other issue, and you talk about strange political bedfellows. It strikes me that, and this is in terms of who we need to talk to and who we might be surprised to find alliances with, you know, they had that hard-fought gambling issue in Kanawha County and a couple of others because there are interests that would like to build casinos.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who wants to bring... how much panache, how much glitz and glitter can you put around a casino in a place that's poisoned?
Well,
you know, it might behoove us to talk to the gambling interests, and I know that there's a significant portion of the groups that would go, you know, oh no, not them. We've got to have people that have the money to fight this fight.
Yeah. Right.
Well, who are these people though, Bob? I wouldn't know where to even begin to look.
And are they absentee landowners? I don't.
Yeah.
Know.
Sure they are.
Where are they from?
God, I.
Yeah. See, that's the problem.
Hotel, I mean, but it's discoverable information.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It just takes some digging.
And frankly, a casino is a significantly less invasive footprint on the land than a mountaintop removal operation.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides decent, you know, the people who work, especially if they're union jobs, you know, union electricians, union building trades, putting the things up. Union IBEW people doing the lights and the computer stuff and these are high dollar jobs,
mm-hmm.
and these are high dollar jobs that do not depend on a guy's ability to run a D9 cat over a vast moonscape wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would we rather see? We love tourism,
mm-hmm. right.
And you know why wouldn't we get behind for instance. Something like hotels and casinos, because they're going to do they're not going to do any valley fills,
right?
They're not going to blow the tops off any mountains indiscriminately. I mean, you know, they might need to flatten a little bit to put the hotel up there on the knob,
right?
But we have to be able to. God, I hate this phrase. Think outside the box.
Well, it's true, Bob. We do,
and I think another place we can think outside of the box is senior citizens. My mother, Nanette met my mother.
Oh, I love her.
She's a firebrand, too.
Yes.
Yeah. She's a Republican to boot. That's hard to believe, isn't it? But,
I would have never dreamed.
No, you would never dream. She doesn't vote for him anymore. She always says that I didn't leave the party. The party left me.
She's kind of like us, isn't it?
Yeah.
We didn't leave the party. The party left us.
She has just been... a rock as far as helping us to get the word out about mountaintop removal. She carries a shopping bag in the back of her car full of DVD. No, she's on the governor's advisory board for the Commission on Aging. So she travels and she goes to meetings, and every place she goes, she puts these DVDs in people's hands. People that work at the Secretary of State's office, people that work for the Forest Service, all the stuff, you know?
Uh-huh.
And most times she's running into people that are senior citizens at the church, wherever.
Uh-huh.
These people, when they take the message home and they look at it, they are literally appalled. But they're kind of hamstrung in a way because most of them are not on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Okay? They don't have the ability to send emails and, you know, all these things like we do. They don't really know who to send a letter to. Okay, or what to say, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something that we all should look more at is is going after the older people. The government's not doing anything for them.
No.
Okay? So they're not really beholden to anybody. They may be one heck of a force for us if we went out there and figured out how to corral them. They're a huge voting bloc in this state.
Well, they vote.
Yeah, they vote. That's why they're a huge voting bloc. You know? And we talk about being an aging state and developing retirement communities. And these people aren't afraid to speak up. So maybe we ought to think also about trying to figure out how to harness some of their energy.
Well, isn't Pauline Canterbury also associated with the senior citizens?
She is. She's on the board, I think, of the Committee on Aging down in Boone County.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she is. Yeah. So we've got a few people out there that are in those aging organizations. Maybe if we could figure out a way to, some sort of a collective, broad, sweeping, statewide outreach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And
how do we coordinate that, though?
Grassroots outreach.
Oh.
Well, where is the BJ? You know, you mentioned a little bit ago, and we haven't done near justice to your film work in this conversation. Do you have a timeline of expectations for when Rise Up West Virginia comes out?
I had originally said I was going to get it done by Thanksgiving, but that's creeping up on me very quick. It'll be the first part of December.
Wow.
And I'll let you know a date as soon as I'm done. I'm flying through it as quickly as I can. And of course, I keep taking these side steps, like going to Anstead. And
are you going to put it up on filmbaby.com or anything like that to help get it out there, or just distribute it yourself independently? It's an independent film distribution site.
I've never done that because they always want 50%, and I'm going to charge so little for this. Because there needs to be films out there that are very affordable for people, so that they can, that they've got the couple of bucks in their pocket to pay for it. Because if I can push enough of them, I can recoup my production costs and have enough money to get DVDs made to give to people. It's real important to be able to give DVDs to people that live in these communities. People that are working with the activist groups and all these people, they're real important tools for them. And
what about film festivals, things like that? Do you do that?
I haven't in the past because I'm going to this time. I'm going to figure out a way to do it. They charge these phenomenal entry fees, and the festivals have become so overburdened with the number of film entries anymore. Some of them are getting like 1,000, 1,500 entries, and they're going to pick 16 films, you know. So there's another money-making racket going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are places out there, and I have real good connections through all the library systems and the university system. I show my films a lot at colleges and universities. And I'll reach out to everybody that I know, to get the word out and to get these things in as many people's hands as we can. And then Rise Up West Virginia, second edition, will be right on its tail. I'm just going to be trucking around, filming people's stories, taking this road trip, just keep throwing this out to people. Hopefully it catches on before I die.
Well, you know, I asked because coming from Alabama, as I do, BJ, there's a wonderful...
Oh, are you from Alabama?
I was born and raised down there. All my people are from up here, though.
I didn't know that.
There's a great little film festival down in my hometown, and I was just checking. The extended deadline is like December 14th is the last day. Remember George Lindsay played Goober on...
Yeah.
He's a graduate of that university down there, the University of North Alabama.
Really?
And he has basically endowed a film festival.
Cool.
And let's see, their entry fee is $35.
That's not bad.
And I've attended a couple of times, and there is just wonderful films that come out of something like that.
Then, you know, I think this is like everything else we've been talking about. It's like I've just got to cannot get nose to the grindstone for every single possibility, you know, to get this out there.
And, you know, forgive me for, well, no, don't forgive me. I shouldn't apologize for this. No, that area, the Shoals area of Alabama, yeah, that's one of the, that's one of those areas that's, you know, just burning burning Appalachian coal for all they're worth.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's I have a feeling this might resonate down there. Not that I, you know, nothing, you know, it's worth considering if you've got it, if you've got it done by December 14th. $35 and you're in the festival, and
yeah,
it's
cool.
And then the festival itself happens in like March. And it's just fun. It's they put on a nice little shindig, and they show films all around the town all week long, and it's just a neat little small town thing.
I'll just go ahead and tell you this. I don't think it's any big deep dark secret, but oh, maybe it is, but I'll give it away. You know, Jim Hightower. You know who I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he has a new book coming out, which comes out in March. And I can't remember the title of it, but it has to do with, you know, energy and bush bashing, you know, the whole thing. He actually contacted Alan Johnson with Christian for the Mountain. And when he goes on book tour, he's going to do a national book tour. And he has invited us to piggyback with him.
Oh, wow.
He would like for us to go to some events, particularly ones that are on the East Coast that's easy for us to get to. And be able to take, you know, the Mountain Morning film and Rise Up West Virginia and get out there along with him and plug it. Because he's been following us, and he actually, in his new book, he's got one whole section that's about Christians for the Mountains and what we have been doing on the mountaintop removal issue. And so this could be a real, if this pans out, it could be a real opportunity
to
reach out around the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Because you go out talking to the kind of people that Jim Hightower is going to attract. Those are people that are going to be like-minded with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's an awesome and wonderful opportunity.
So keep our fingers crossed. If that works out, it could be a huge opportunity.
Oh, well, yeah, beyond anything you might well be able to imagine.
Yeah, right, right. So we've made the commitment that if it works out, we've made the commitment to get out there and do
it. Because you talk about recouping costs. You've burned a lot of gasoline getting here, there, and everywhere, haven't you, BJ?
Oh, Lord have mercy. And I don't have a job.
Yeah, but I notice on the website there at patchworkfilms.com, for a woman who doesn't have a job, you do an awful lot.
Well, daggone. I'm not boasting. I work really hard. And someone said to me, I don't know who it was I was talking to today. Oh, Paige Del Pardo.
Yeah, I know Paige.
Yeah, and he said something about how many people are there at this tireless patchwork films crew. And I said, it's just me. But, you know, when I launched into doing this, fighting mountaintop removal, I sat down with my husband and my kids and told them what kind of sacrifice this is going to entail on their end for me to do this. And they didn't hesitate. They didn't hesitate. You know, if this means that we don't have, you know, money coming into the house that we were used to having, then that's what it means. If it means you don't have time to do the laundry, that's what it means. You know, you have to do this. And so my family has sacrificed for me to help fight this battle, and never in this world will I be able to thank them enough for that.
Well, you know, you maintain a heck of a little blog there too, BJ, and you can get to it through patchworkfilms.com. That's riseupwestvirginia.blogspot.com.
Right.
And I assume that that's where you put your latest clips. Photos, things like that.
My personal rantings and ravings.
Well, there's that too, but you know, the delightfully literate as compared to a lot of the blogs you see out there. So, yeah, I'm grateful for the content, believe me. And it was mighty nice of you to come by the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com site and post a comment as well. We love, you know.
I was just flabbergasted when Sue, is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah, put that after Nanette sent her all that great stuff, and she just threw it right up on the blog. I got so excited. That was great.
Well, it's about community building, and I think although we've sort of been a one-note songbook this evening, and that's no sin. That's why Conversation Radio exists. We've talked a lot about mountaintop removal, but the fact of the matter is, BJ and Nanette, a lot of these issues apply equally well to community building, to eliminating that sense of isolation that I was talking about earlier, and to empowering people to be able to have the tools to go out and speak cogently and coherently and passionately, as you both do, about issues that matter. And I know that I know that mountaintop removal is the issue that we've been on tonight, but I'll warrant, and I know from Nanette, I'll warrant that if we were to verge off into a few other things, BJ, you and I wouldn't I wouldn't suddenly find out that you were a closet fundamentalist or something like that.
Oh, no. You probably would get no surprises.
Yeah, but and so the thing is, the people who hate torture are the same people who want decent working conditions and oppose these stupid fair so-called free trade bills.
That's
like,
right.
Barack Obama and Senator Clinton have both come out in favor of the Peru Free Trade Agreement. You know, and it's one of those "Oh my God, my head's going to explode" kind of moments. And
I've had quite a few of those lately, Bob.
They just come in waves, don't they, Nanette?
Yeah.
But the thing is, what reminded me of this is when you mentioned that the tour with Jim Hightower, you'd be speaking to like-minded individuals. That is something that I have preached on ceaselessly and seemingly ceaselessly, and that is the Republican right and the freaks, what I call them. Have got it down pat, and they will get that. They will hold hands. The corporate banking industry will hold hands with the fundamentalist snake handling, strychnine drinking, sew up the uterus crowd, and they get along fine. On the other hand, we still have a little bit of a struggle ahead of us, BJ, because that old saw from Will Rogers still obtains. I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat.
Right.
I promised when the Democrats came into power and took Congress in November, well before they ever did, I said, listen, I'm going to be harder on the Democrats than I ever have been on the Republicans.
We need to be.
Because I expect
we do.
More.
Yes, we do. Because they're dropping the ball, too.
They've
dropped it big time.
And when I hear Senator Obama talking about clean coal technology, I just go, ah! I'm like that Norwegian painting. The scream.
Right.
But you see, that's what gets me about Obama. He's got a face like a beech nut. He'll tell one group one thing. He goes over here and tells them something else about coal.
Right.
He's for it, then he's against it, then he's for it. Which is it? Get your facts straight. Get your idea. Get your head screwed on straight.
So it falls to us to try to, if we find ways into the same groups that are the same decent people who want an America that doesn't torture, who want an America that honors its Constitution, who want an America that doesn't attack countries that haven't lifted a finger against us, those are the same people that if they only learn about it, will pay attention and get activist and get activated about this issue. Am I lecturing yet?
No.
Okay, just checking.
And I tell you, someone said to me not long ago that had an event downtown here where they brought in a filmmaker to show a film that had to do, I can't remember the name of the film, but he's this guy, he made a film about all of a sudden it dawned on him that, we were burning up the planet, global warming, and he was contributing and blah, blah, blah. So the local people went to the film, and when it was over, this older woman said, she heard a friend of hers say, sometimes when we have these events, I feel like we're preaching to the choir. Okay? And we wonder about that, don't we?
Well, sure we do.
Yeah, are we preaching to the choir? And this lady turned around to her and she said, no, I have a new way of looking at it. We're nurturing the choir.
I had a really long conversation, Nanette, you probably heard it. It was Friday night, wasn't it? a really long conversation with a very dear friend of the show who experiences profound frustration, and he keeps saying, what we're doing is not working. We're just preaching to the choir. It's not working. We're not ending the war. The war's not over yet. And I kept saying, and I'm not gossiping here. You just weren't there for the show, BJ. I'm just filling you in.
Right.
And I kept saying, you know, look, when the war started and the anti-war people were standing there, they threw rocks, you know, and called us morons and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, 95% for the war and 5%, you know, dirty old hippies. And the country is 75%, you know, against the war now.
Mm-hmm. The peace vigils paid off.
And they did. Even though the crowd didn't grow, the message did. And
yes.
By getting together in our groups and supporting each other and giving ourselves that spiritual lift, we energize and make ourselves stronger so that we can go out and we can look somebody straight in the eye and say, you know, this has to stop.
That's right. Well, you know what? If we don't stick together with our own groups, and like you say, we talk about it among ourselves. Maybe we are preaching to the choir. We're uplifting the choir. Because if we try to do it by ourselves, we're going to burn out.
That's right.
Well, sure. And you know what? If you don't turn around and preach to the choir once in a while, you're going to lose your choir.
Well, that's right. You have to.
And sometimes you need to do some toe-stepping, too.
Yeah.
Step on your toes, as the old preachers used to say.
That's right. I got a letter from a lady in Alabama the other day. Speaking of Alabama, we seem to be really connected to Alabama here tonight. This was, an older woman had ordered two of the DVDs of Mountain Morning. I sent them to her. And she sent a letter. And thanked me for sending them so quickly that she wanted to order four more because she watched it and she was so moved, and I had no idea. This is what she said. I had no idea that this was going on and that it was this bad. She said, I'm going to take the new DVDs to the public libraries in my community and give them to them, and hopefully people will check them out and watch them. She said, in the meantime, let me know whatever I can do to help, and I promise I'll turn out my lights.
Bless her heart.
Bless her heart. And so you see, sometimes you fire this stuff out, you know, to people that they don't have a face, they only have a name to you, you know, and they get it. They get it. And that's why I think if we just keep towing the line, getting this message out, that enough people are going to get it. I just hope they get here to help us save it in time.
Well, indeed. And by the way, BJ, and I'm sure Nanette will echo this, you're more than welcome in the chat room. You know, we maintain this as a sort of, you know, we're trying to create a full multimedia experience, radio, we're working on video. That's why I need to sit down and learn how to edit from you. And blogging and everything that goes with it, podcasting, yada yada yada. We've got a great little group of folks that gather in the chat room of an evening, and it's over at headonradionetwork.com, and you just, it's a Java chat. You just load Java and you register and stuff, and it's cool.
Good deal.
Wander in anytime.
Oh, I would love to.
And let me say, you sound like you're getting ready to sign me off here.
Well, we are because I'm
the three
hours has flown by.
Oh my gosh! Goodness sake! I missed my dinner. Let me just throw out something really, really quick.
Please.
I'm in Anstead. Let's go full circle before we leave this.
Okay.
I edited that down into a 4-minute little film to plug the Clean Water Act. Actually, it is on my YouTube. Okay, which is youtube.com/patchworkfilm.
Mm-hmm.
People can go there and watch and actually see the best part, the shining moments of the blessings on the mountains down in Anstead on Saturday.
Oh, wonderful.
It's Patchwork Films, F-I-L-M-S?
Yeah.
If I can type, there we go. Okay, the link is up in the chat room. So youtube.com/patchworkfilms. What's the title on it?
That's it. And the title of the film is Blessing of the Mountains.
Great.
Okay.
Well, BJ, I hope, you know, don't wait for me to necessarily call or anything. If the spirit gets all over you.
I wrote. I'll just jump right on it.
Yeah, the phone number's here, and it's Conversation Radio, and we're deadly in earnest about that, as you can probably tell now. No commercials.
This is great, great fun.
So, you know, keep us posted. Let us, you know, shoot a note to Sue or me or anybody. Let us know when there's new film up to be seen, and you know, we'll keep on doing what we're doing, and we're happy to that you're out there making this a visual experience, and maybe you never know when the right person's going to see it.
You never know, and thank you all for letting me be on here and jabber all night, and to Nanette and to Bob, both of you. Thank you both.
BJ, get up in the chat room and talk to us for a little bit. There's a bunch of fans sitting in here.
Okay,
dear.
Bless your heart, BJ. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
Love you.
Bye. And Nanette, I gotta get ready for Peter's show. So thanks for ringing in and making this. Bringing a little more depth and a little more breadth to this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Well, Bob, we'll talk to you later then.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Bye. You know, I so very appreciate BJ's time and Nanette's as well, because when somebody comes from not necessarily your community and makes a substantial travel commitment to see what they're doing to your place, it means so very, very much. And, you know, this was we hadn't done a whole show on this in a long time, and I really hope you get a sense of how critically important this all is, because it is of a piece. This is the same issue as ending the war. This is the same issue as stopping torture. This is the same issue as ending domestic spying. This is the same issue as global warming, for God's sakes. It's the same issue as human rights for all the citizens of this country. They all come together. They all merge. If one matters to you, all the other must as well. And we must agree amongst ourselves that we will honor and revere all of those issues. Gender issues, pay equity issues, working rights issues, they're all our issues. And the day that we think that we've got one issue that we're dedicated to, it's why we have the problems we have. It's not back scratching, it's understanding that, as that great Ben Lee song goes that John Fox introduced me to, we're all in this together. And speaking of All Foxed Up with John Fox coming your way at midnight Eastern time, he's got an interesting topic for this evening. He's going to be talking about industrial hemp and the lawsuit started by some U.S. farmers trying to dissociate it from, pot. Because industrial hemp should be part of our energy future. So stick around. I hope you'll join us for that at midnight Eastern time, 9 o'clock Pacific. Coming up next, of course, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, with your host, Peter Godbold, our IT professional as well, who certainly put in some hours this weekend with me as we continued work on building the perfect beast. And what a dandy little beast it's proving to be. I think we're going to have a lot of fun expanding operations and using that as the base from which we launch that expansion, that computer. So Peter's on the way, followed by the Cup of Joe Nighttime Cup coming along at 11 p.m. Eastern. Well, I'm glad it's Monday. So, you know, thanks everybody for spending time with us. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. If you value what happens on the horn, you value what happens at whiterosesociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. Twitter.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. Pakistan being given 10 days to lift current martial law or face suspension from a 53-nation bloc. Foreign ministers put out the warning in light of continuing emergency rule in Pakistan. Former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto placed again under house arrest for the second time in 4 days. She's being kept from leading tomorrow's 185-mile procession in protest of current martial law. President Musharraf promises that general elections will be held by January 9th, but that the state of emergency imposed 1 week ago will stay in place till then. Hamas police killing 7 people in Gaza City during a huge political rally to commemorate the death of Yasser Arafat. Another 130 people were wounded. There's a growing humanitarian crisis in Somalia. Over the last 24 hours, residents fled the capital city of Mogadishu as government forces increased efforts to crush Islamist-led insurgents. Aid workers say at least 70 people have been killed during more than 1 week of intense fighting, bringing the total number of displaced Somalians to 850,000. The U.S. military is reversing the troop surge in Iraq. Commanders are waiting to see if the recent drop in violence will hold. 20 combat brigades have shrunk to 19 in the volatile Diyala province. The White House is under federal court order to preserve copies of its email messages in response to a pair of lawsuits brought by 2 private citizens groups. The U.S. Justice Department asked that the courts accept a White House promise to save all future backup tapes, but U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy decided that was not enough. As the Roman Catholic Church in the U.S. attempts to overcome a damaging scandal involving pedophile priests, Pope Benedict XVI makes a visit to America next April. He'll visit Washington, D.C. and New York City, including an address to the United Nations. It's the first planned papal visit to the U.S. since 1994.